Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Ding, 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 ding. So just to finish the story I was telling you off the air. So I wanted to tell Eleanor Mondale that, hey, my dad just won one less state than your dad did in 1984.
Brutal.
My dad owned a hardware store.
Brutal.
That's what I wanted to say to her.
Oh, yeah,
we're on now. Bruce Wolf and Carol Roth is in with us again. This is our second
morning.
Time working together. And
but it feels kind of like our 95th time working together, don't you?
Is that good or bad?
Yes.
Exactly. Exactly. Just answer the question yes or no.
Yes. Yes,
no matter
and,
what the
yes
question
and,
is.
Bruce.
So, oh, okay. So just to establish your bona fides here, do a little curriculum vitae. Who are you again? You're Carol Roth. Who are you?
Who am I?
You could summarize it in a tweet thread.
I am an entrepreneur, mm-hmm. a recovering investment banker,
right.
and I play myself on television.
Really?
And
you are on TV. You're on, what, FNBC or FNBC? What is
Fox,
it?
Fox Business. You can catch me this afternoon on After
really?
The Bell, 3 p.m. Central.
And you're on Twitter, and people retweet you a lot more than they retweet me.
Yeah, I get things going sometimes.
You do.
I do.
You're really a go-getter and all that.
At Carol J.S. Roth, since we're plugging it.
At Carol
J.S.
Roth.
Roth.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. How do you feel about the show so far?
I think it's phenomenal. I think we're killing
All right.
killing it. 5:30
So you want to get right into it here? What do you think of Julian Assange? Yesterday, it actually broke. This is the second day of Julian Assange. It broke when we were on the air yesterday morning. Sean Thompson and I were on, and he was dragged out. Kind of looked like Dr. Dow being dragged off the United Airlines flight, which was. And thank you for the. Yeah. Is that Julian Assange or Dr. Dow? Name that guy dragged.
name the person
unwilling.
Being dragged against their will.
And of course, Dr. Dow made news earlier this week because he was on Good Morning America. They finally had the interview everybody was waiting for. How does Dr. Dow feel?
How long has it been since Dr. Dow?
It's a fortnight at least. So and you know that he allegedly Dr. Dow got a 7-figure settlement plus lifetime membership in the Red Carpet Burn Club.
Red Carpet Burn Club, amazing. Amazing. And free drinks on the flights.
Thank you so much.
Yes, free drinks.
You didn't actually have to. All you had to do was laugh at that. You didn't really have to try to top it with the free drinks. I'm just trying to give you some radio tips
because
I'm a legend in TV and radio in Chicago.
A legend in TV and radio and in your own mind.
Certainly, I am.
Yes.
So
back to Assange.
So Assange, the question, of course, yesterday was, they arrested him, but is he actually guilty of anything? Because if you watched Fox yesterday and saw Judge Napolitano, for example, he says, no, of course, Judge Napolitano, I've come to suck your blood. My hair is combed back and I am the vampire of the judiciary.
I love the judge. You actually know him. I do. I love the judge.
See, I got to be careful because you actually mix it up with these people.
These are my peeps.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Anyway, he's very smart, of course, Judge Napolitano.
Yes.
But what he said, no, you have a First Amendment right to publish this, and Julian Assange is a journalist. If you recall the New York Times case, the Pentagon Papers, and Daniel Ellsberg leaked the Pentagon Papers to the New York Times, the way it works in America is the guy who leaks the stuff is culpable. You can charge him with a crime. You could charge Bradley, nay Chelsea, or Chelsea, nay Bradley Manning, with a crime,
right.
and then let him off like Obama did, but you can't throw the journalist in jail because that would chill right. the First Amendment.
Exactly.
So that's Judge Napolitano's view. On the other hand, We have none other than Andy McCarthy
of mannequin fame.
Yes. Who is Andy McCarthy? Is that the name of the mannequin in Weekend at Bernie's?
No, Pretty in Pink.
Oh, okay.
Mannequin.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he was in Weekend at Bernie's.
All right, I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know any cultural reference after 1970.
And his career has been so amazing that he's gone on to do other things in politics too. Correct.
Okay, but Andy McCarthy writes for National Review, and he is the former federal prosecutor who put away the blind sheikh, the guy who was responsible for the first World Trade Center bombing. And he essentially says that there is a federal terrorism statute which involves computer fraud, which there was here. Okay, we can aiding and abetting the computer fraud. And there's evidence that Julian Assange did help Chelsea, Bradley Manning put in a password or something to do this. So he did help it out. And that it does something against the United States of America. Let me look at the statute here, if I may look it up right now. Do you have the statute book, Carol, by any chance?
Okay. It's the one I left behind. I brought you the right. Cosmo Girls Guide to the Universe, forgot that.
And I just found it in the Cosmo Guide. Here it is. It is calculated to influence or affect the conduct of government by intimidation or coercion, or to retaliate against government conduct. Well, that sounds very broad to me. I mean, because any editorial by, National Review saying that we should overturn the same-sex marriage case would be calculated to retaliate against government contact. It sounds overly broad. So I'm wondering if the statute itself is constitutional. Now, we're getting a little too into the weeds.
Yeah, this is very wonky. Okay. I'm not a lawyer. I don't play one on TV.
I am
a lawyer, or the radio.
Yeah, okay.
But this is sort of my take. If he just published the information, and I think that's the role of a journalist, and that's fine. If he was involved in hacking, I think that's not fine. That seems to be something against law. My big issue here is I just don't know what information is true. And obviously we've been through so many things from Russia collusion on down that haven't been true that it's hard to trust the sources of information. So I think it really depends on what evidence they had that he had a role in that.
That is such a sober review of what went on. And I'm not accustomed to that, having worked the first 4 days of the show with Sean from Elmwood Park. That's exactly what it's going to be about. It may wind up being a question of fact that goes before the jury, which they will have to decide, was Julian Assange involved in this hacking? Did he help with the password? It may or may not get to the jury at some point because the courts are protective of the First Amendment.
Okay, let me ask you, are you into a good conspiracy theory?
Sure. I mean, we're on the radio.
All right,
it's all about speculating.
Let me ask you this. So I'm hearing in corners of the interweb some speculation that perhaps Donald Trump would pardon Assange. And this is all an elaborate setup to get some more dirt on Hillary. What do you think about that?
You mean a trade-off that Donald Trump?
This is not my theory. This is the interwebs conspiracy.
Well, first
theory.
Of all, Donald Trump, let's take at face value what he has to say about this. And he, of course, would never lie to us. So here's what he had to say.
I know nothing about WikiLeaks. It's not my thing. And I know there is something having to do with Julian Assange. I know nothing really about him. It's not my deal in life.
So he's quoting Colonel Klink. I know nothing.
He's quoting Mariah Carey. Mariah Carey, I don't know her.
He was all about WikiLeaks during the campaign. He openly in front of the masses said, I can't wait for the next dump on Hillary Clinton. So he was all about WikiLeaks. That's classic Trump, right?
I mean, that's what he does is that if he wants to talk about it, he'll talk about it. If not, then he doesn't know.
But right. Yeah. It's interesting conspiracy theory. I don't give them. Well, who's organizing the conspiracy? The stumble bum Roger Stone? I don't give them enough credit to be able to concoct something like that.
I think that's a valid point. That's, you know, if you go back to the, you know, kind of big master plans that everybody's always thinking about, no. None of these people are smart enough to carry out these big master plans.
You notice the whole thing, it was said about George Bush the second, as well as Donald Trump. They are both diabolical and stupid. And I can't wrap my stupid head around the idea that somebody could be both diabolical and stupid. You got to be smart in order to be diabolical. In order to hatch,
or you're
a
just,
plot.
Or just a narcissistic sociopath.
Now, that is the way forward on this.
A narcissistic sociopath. So you're self-involved. You have basically no feeling. You could be a stupid narcissistic sociopath. I don't think that those things are mutually exclusive.
Where did I... Oh, I think it was... Oh, yes. It was on the show that I watch about the baseball announcer, Brockmeyer, just last night. He said that, hey, just because you're a sociopath doesn't mean that you're a serial killer.
Which is true. And by the way, sociopaths and psychopaths, which are basically the same thing. I've done a lot of strange research on this. So apparently they say 1% of the general population are psychopaths, which means that we have like 3.25 million psychopaths walking around. Mm-hmm. In prison, it's 25% of the population.
Really?
So the ones that are violent and are mostly in prison, probably a few walking out, and then the rest of them are politicians, people in the media, and CEOs.
Oh, that's nice
to
know that
that's where they are.
So
that's where they hang
out.
There's
a very fine line between our most successful people in the world and the people who are in prison. And
100%.
All the people in prison are writing to me to have them review their cases because I work for a law firm. And they write on legal pads in handwriting because they don't have the computers. They cite cases. And of course, the standard, because I work for a personal injury firm and they're all dealing in criminal cases, I just write, we don't possess the expertise to deal with your case. And please don't bother me again. And my boss said, he joked to me when he first gave me this assignment, he said, by the way, you have to write your home address on all. It's a requirement of the law.
Gosh.
Of course, me being credulous, I believed it.
Oh my gosh.
Believe I'm on the air with the estimable Carol Roth. It's Bruce Wolf here on AM 560, The Answer.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Bruce Wolf and Carol Roth in for Dan and Amy. We've got I got a tweet from Kevin Rooney who says, but who's kidding? Who? Should be whom, right? Assange's arrest is about the 2016 election, not Manning and the Fed's attempt to tie him into Russia and the Trump campaign. They need an excuse for the spying they did. Yeah, but why would Donald Trump want him arrested? I mean, what Assange did benefited Trump. Unless we go with your conspiracy theory that there's a trade that's going on.
It's all a diabolical but stupid conspiracy theory.
In order to get some more dirt on whom? Hillary?
Hillary Clinton. I mean, could you imagine?
Well, why do we need more dirt on Hillary? That ship has sailed.
You never know. I mean, we got an election coming up. We got to drudge this all up again.
By the way, speaking of ships that have sailed, thank you, Keith. One of our producers here who put this in my head so I can't shake it out because, you know, I'll chase any squirrel. It was on this date in 1914 that the Titanic didn't set sail. It was in the middle of its voyage at that point.
Our heart is going on right now. If you could imagine, Bruce,
I mean,
we're sailing the seas. You're Jack, I'm Rose. Uh-huh. We're living up. We don't know. We have no idea what's ahead of us.
Now, all right. Keith is in here. Keith, I mean, the chutzpah of you. I mean, this is worse than when people like celebrate the 36th anniversary of something. This is the middle of the voyage we're talking about.
First of all, I have to issue a correction or clarification. It was 1912, not 1914. Thank you.
Okay, it's 1912 that it happened, but this is the middle of the voyage.
Yeah, right, everything was going fine.
Everything is fine. Jack,
we're dancing.
And, yeah,
we haven't gotten to rearranging the deck chairs yet. That comes in the 9 o'clock hour.
That's right. If we make this like the Titanic. Which it is, by the 9 o'clock hour, we're rearranging the
Exactly.
Actually, by
that's how we're going to end. We're going to end with the rearranging of the deck chairs.
No, I think we end at that point. You're holding on to the one little piece of what was it?
You're holding on to the wood.
I'm sitting on
the wood. You're holding on, and I'm kicking your hands up.
Exactly.
Going,
hey, there's
no
room for both of us
no
here.
No room for you, but.
Yeah.
I'll remember you. Don't
There's
worry about
room
it.
For both of us on this show.
Never let go, Bruce. Never.
Yeah, okay.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Dennis in Crystal Lake.
No, no, a civil war is going to take place. It
oh,
will.
Really? Okay.
I'm in touch with some stuff that you might not touch.
On AM 560.
Thanks, Dennis. We'll leave that there.
The Answer.
Well, I don't think I'm going to give out the phone number there. Bruce Wolf and Carol Roth in for Dan and Amy. Thanks for coming in this morning.
Running with the devil. That you must be the devil.
I would hope so. I'd like
the devil with show tunes.
Exactly. Well, as a matter of fact, now that you mentioned Damn Yankees, I could sing one of the devil's songs from there.
I mean, don't let me wants, Lola gets.
Anyway, so Mike Scott was reporting that Herman Cain is out of the running to be in the Fed or on the Fed.
He got 999.
He's gone. He does have a past, but Mitch McConnell apparently said there wasn't a lot of enthusiasm for him. But
do you prefer Cocaine Mitch or Nuclear Mitch as his moniker?
I feel woman in drag, Mitch, old lady in drag, Mitch. You know, Mitch is a great statesman. I mean, as much as we can make fun of the superficial things, as far as I'm concerned,
he's stone cold.
This guy has all these judicial appointments that are going to last for generations.
Stone cold.
He's real cool. Knows how to handle Trump. You know, I don't think a shutdown, Brett is really the kind of thing that, you know, anybody wins by or something. Yeah, he knows how to handle it. It's the perfect counterpoint to the Trump administration. And Trump is at least smart enough to know that. So Cain is out. I feel bad because I think I screwed the pooch.
is it your fault?
When we interviewed Stephen Moore earlier this week. See, I didn't even think he was going to show up, but he shows up almost every week. Stephen Moore's the other candidate.
Sure.
And, you know, I did ask him, some people say you don't have the intellectual heft. and then he answered that. And then I said, you know, gave some other objection. You've betrayed your principles of free market economics, but it's all general. And he, you know, swatted that away. And Sean was pretty good talking to him. But what I should have hit him with was that during the Great Recession, and I got this from NPR.
The recession?
I'm losing it. Moore complained that the Fed's efforts to prop up the economy with low interest rates would spark runaway inflation. Didn't happen.
Yeah, but you know, that was a common criticism, and we don't know what the fallout's going to be. I mean, the reality is we're in the middle of this experiment. We still have a very large balance sheet. We still have interest rates that are being suppressed. We have the same thing going on around the world, but when we sort of exit this period that we're in, that still could happen.
Okay, so are you giving the answer that Stephen Moore would have given? So basically, you're going to play the role of Stephen Moore.
I should be on the Fed. At the end of the day, forget Stephen Moore and forget Herman Cain. I should be on the Fed.
You went to Wharton, Donald Trump's school.
I did, and I commentate on the Fed and markets every single week. So I'm way in the weeds.
So this isn't just a comedy bit I'm doing. This actually has substance.
All right,
so let me give you the second question, Stephen Moore wannabe.
The gold standard.
All right. There was something else that you
said. The gold standard.
Well, no, he wasn't. Stephen Moore doesn't want to go back to the gold standard.
So Herman Cain wrote on that, but Stephen Moore in the past has been an advocate of the gold standard, even though yesterday or the day before he went on TV and said that he hadn't been, and then they played him some clips, and then he said, well, maybe he had been, and then he wasn't sure if he had been or not.
All right. Well, Moore also said he warned that raising interest rates last year, the Fed was causing a dangerous drop in prices or deflation. Remember that testy exchange that he had with Washington Post columnist Catherine Rampell. So it didn't happen. We don't have deflation. So Stephen Moore is wrong about that. Stephen Moore, go ahead and answer us.
Yeah, here's the challenge with Stephen Moore. Two things. Mm-hmm. One is that in terms of his track record, it hasn't been necessarily stellar. But to be fair, none of the economists and nobody related to the Fed has been stellar. I mean, that's what being an economist is. It's making up stuff and you can't really find your way out of a paper bag. So I don't know if you can ding him for that. I think the big concern is whether or not he is you know, not focused on being independent and thinking about economics. Really, he's a trumpet for Trump, and basically whatever Trump wants him to do. He's a puppet for Trump. Yeah, that's
not
that's
a trumpet for pump.
A trumpet for pump or a puppet for Trump.
Well, I mean, if you're going to make fun of me slurring over
words,
I mean, we're
going to
get
do it.
Down.
Bring it on, Bruce.
All right.
So that's the big issue. Right, I mean, the Fed is supposed to be independent. Trump is not supposed to be commentating on it, which he does all the time.
He's like the FDR of the Fed. He wants to pack the Fed. The other thing was that apparently he had advised Kansas to cut tax rates, and then they didn't have any money because this was supposed to, you know, it's the whole Laffer thing you're going to stimulate the animal spirits and all that. And it didn't happen, and they didn't have any money left, so that didn't work either. Or did we not try it long enough, Stephen Moore?
It's very possible they didn't try it long enough. I am not into the weeds on the intimate details of Kansas. Other than Wizard of Oz kind of stuff, but I don't think that telling people to cut taxes is a bad idea. I think that everybody should cut taxes, but you have to have a plan on the other side to cut spending as well.
Well, you're not in Kansas anymore, Carol.
I am not.
I can tell you that.
But I'm following the yellow brick road.
You are here, and I'm going to lead you down a path.
You're going to ease on down the road.
You know what the funny thing is that Trump does remind me of the Wizard of Oz because
of the wonderful things he does.
Well, yes, because as much as I hate his bombast, and he's such a blowhard, and he's always asking me to retrieve the Wicked Witch's broom, he does wonderful things. He has put on Kavanaugh.
I don't think Gorsuch. I don't think that's the story of the Wizard of Oz. I think the story of the Wizard of Oz is they looked behind the curtain and the guy wasn't what he seemed.
He did wonderful things.
He did wonderful things.
What
wonderful things? Because you like the Munchkins? What kind of wonderful things
Wizard
of Oz
do?
This
is a good term paper for you. What wonderful things did the Wizard of Oz do for the people of Oz? What did he do? I mean, that's a whole horse of a different color that we're talking about right now.
The funny thing is, actually, I do believe that the Wizard of Oz was meant as a political allegory.
Oh, no.
Absolutely.
It stands by itself.
It does.
What, was
I'm
it
saying,
all about Mussolini? It was written like in 1909.
We're going to have to check Wikipedia to get, but I, it, but I,
Al
I
Frank Baum was writing a political
remember
allegory.
Remember that it had some sort of, history as a political allegory.
I mean, who was in charge at that time? Howard Taft?
We're going to look this up right now, Bruce.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll Google this. You drive safely in your cars right now. This is Bruce Wolf and Carol Roth in for Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Wolf and Carol Roth in for Dan and Amy, brought to you by Salerno Butter Cookies and by Salem Cigarettes. Take a puff and it's springtime. And by Winston. Winston tastes good like a cigarette should. And by Dual Filter Terrytons. I'd rather fight than switch. That's an awful lot of cigarette sponsors.
A lot of cigarettes.
So we were talking before the break about the Wizard of Oz being a political allegory.
I was talking about that, and you were saying you didn't believe me.
I didn't believe you. It's just that I didn't know that. I pleaded ignorance. Patrick from Schaumburg, hello.
Hey, how are you? My understanding is that it's an allegory for the election of 1896.
Of course.
There you go, Bruce.
And William Jennings Bryan, I forget if he's the lion or the scarecrow or whatever the heck.
If I only had the courage to run for president.
But who's Dorothy?
If things like this were on the SATs, my life would have been a lot different.
Oh, right. You wouldn't be calling into this show anymore.
That's
You'd
right.
be retired. Thanks so much, Patrick. Appreciate that. Judy Garland on the line. Judy from Lamont. Hi, Judy.
Hi, Judy.
Over the rainbow.
Nice.
Good morning. Bruce, I finally get to talk to you again. This is Judy, Common Core Judy, from that other channel you were on years ago. So I've been following you guys.
Oh, wonderful. You're a stalker. That's great. Hi, Judy.
Yeah. No, but a nice stalker.
Yes.
Wizard of Oz is like one of my favorite movies. So I was telling the call screener because – Because. Not always, but Trump is trying to surround himself with better people. And then, you know, the wizard gave them the beautiful city, so Trump is giving us better jobs and a little bit more pay in the paycheck.
I love this.
And then
I'm giving you
end,
a C-plus over a B-minus right now
and,
on this,
And the yellow brick road is the economy, right, Judy?
The yellow brick road is the economy, so there's very bright things to
what
tie
is
in.
The, let me ask you this. What is the guy who is hanging himself right as they're just passing the Tin Man? You know that story.
I do. Who's the Munchkin, though?
Somebody's hanging himself. That's an apocryphal story, anyway.
Yeah, that's an urban myth. But I want to know, who do you think the Munchkins are?
The Munchkins are all the Democrats.
There we go. Thanks so much. Okay. And, you know, I just named Judy the mayor of the Lollipop League.
I like
the
it.
Lullaby League. Tom.
Lollipop Guilds.
Oh, my God. I get my guilds and I... Tom from Hobart.
They've organized. They've unionized.
Yes, Tom.
Yes, are the flying monkeys representative of the communists and the socialists?
Right, they're tearing
Congress.
Us apart.
It's Congress.
Because you know what? There's some of us over there and over there and over there. Yes.
See, we talk about the Wizard of Oz. You didn't believe me. It's an allegory. Now we've got this rich discussion, and we're naming all of the characters.
Yes, it's
amazing.
Great. I actually went to the lot where they shot The Wizard of Oz, you know, because you take the tour of the MGM studios when you're out
you,
there.
No, you take the tour of the MGM studios.
You didn't.
No,
you were smart because you go in there and you know what you see?
You see an empty lot.
An empty lot with concrete in
it.
That's all you
That's
see.
All you see.
There's nothing there. I mean, could they have left like one of the poppies or something.
Well,
you know
what we do in my neighborhood is we do the Jussie Smollett tour and we show
live in Streeterville.
Yes, so where the fake crime happened and we end at the subway and you get your subway sandwich and then you drop it on the ground. And I feel like that's better than the lot tour because at least you get a subway sandwich out of the deal.
Now, here's the thing. There is news. Apparently, the city of Chicago filed a lawsuit yesterday saying that they want to recover the $130,000 that they spent on the investigation.
Not enough, but
by the way,
for them.
I'm still, because I'm the devil's advocate here, I still think it's possible that the brothers, the Sarnaev brothers, I forgot. Oh, no, that's the Boston Marathon.
You think the brothers are the MAGA guys?
The Ozymandias brothers or whatever they are.
Osindaro.
Oh, yeah, whatever. They were wearing those masks at the time.
That they bought with his credit card.
They got. Oh, I didn't know they got it with his credit card. Did they buy the masks with his credit card?
I'm not sure about that fact. I read that on the internet, and he paid them a big check.
No,
and oh, by the way,
no, but the check
have you
their,
seen
objection.
The brothers? No. Have you seen the brothers? There's no way that you think that those amazing bodybuilders are people who are shouting, "This is MAGA country, and we're going to make America great again." They're your personal trainers.
Come on, Bruce.
All
right, will you let me give the other side of the story, counselor? I mean, you make a great case, and you're probably right, but let me try and, you know, do something with it here. They're wearing the masks. They're into show business. They put a little makeup on, not the white face of the Joker that one of them did.
Let's set the stage. They're wearing the masks. Yeah. It's 20 below zero.
So what? They're doing it. And they scare
the
and they scare him. And they want to scare him. Now, why they wanted to scare him, I don't know.
They just happen to know that some guy decided who's a big star who could have anything delivered is going out at 2 a.m.
No, they were supposed to meet him.
So obviously, you're talking yourself out of the case. He obviously knew that he was going to be there. He knew that they were going to be there. It's a setup, Bruce.
Your Honor.
It's a setup. But you can take the studio tour
with me and
Streeter.
Your Honor, I object. You can't object. You're a prospective juror.
That doesn't matter. I object.
Your Honor, I want to exercise one of my peremptory challenges and get this woman off my jury. Okay. First of all, you live in Streeterville, so you're biased anyway. Plus, you have a degree from Wharton, so you can make some sense out of this. Look, I just think it's not beyond a shadow of a doubt, but it is beyond reasonable doubt. So Kim Fox is doubling down on the race card now.
I mean, what is she going to say? Right?
I warned people about her during the primary because I think this Donna Moore was running against her, and she played the race card against Donna Moore. She'll do this all the time. And Jesse Jackson aids and abets all this stuff.
And that's where
our society is right now.
Yeah, and she's incredibly connected, right? She's connected with Soros and Kamala Harris and all kinds of people.
Yeah, well, now that's your conspiracy theory. Bob from Buffalo Grove, very quickly. Bob, yes. Hi, Bob. Are you there, Bob? I think we lost Bob. I think he wanted to say that AOC was Dorothy, which actually, that's kind of nice.
I think that's super generous.
Well, she learns.
Super generous.
She learns that there's no place like home, which is Brooklyn,
which is where she needs to go back to.
High five me there, girl.
Air five.
I can't reach you over the transom here. I think I strained my intercostal muscle.
Oy vey, what are you going to do?
All right, coming up after 6 o'clock, Carol has the line of the century, if you follow her on Twitter, about Jay Cutler and breastfeeding.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Ding, 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 ding. Bruce Wolf and Carol Roth in for Dan and Amy. So, Carol, I always love doing stories that, you know, right in the news, right at this moment.
Breaking,
bang, bang,
breaking,
bang,
breaking,
bang,
breaking.
Bang. I mean, Julian Assange is so 24 news cycles ago, right? So, you heard it on our news. White House officials have tried to pressure U.S. immigration authorities to release detainees onto the streets of sanctuary cities to retaliate against President Trump's political adversaries. According to Department of Homeland Security officials and email messages reviewed by the Washington Post. Now, I guess the White House has denied it. I would embrace it. of course. You ever watch Victor Davis Hanson on Fox or read any of his stuff?
No.
Okay. Well, let me educate you. Finally, I know something that you don't know, Wharton grad. So, and let me remind you that Donald Trump also got into Wharton. Okay. I assume you came from a billionaire family.
Yeah, my dad was an electrician.
Okay,
there you go. Pretty close.
All right. Yeah. So, his whole thing is, and he lives among immigrants in California, Victor Davis Hanson, and he's this intellectual who's
illegal immigrants. Not immigrants, illegal immigrants.
Well, both of them. He lives among both of them, but there's a lot of illegals as well. And, you know, if you're the kind of person who has to go to some sort of medical center where, you know, a lot of the people aren't speaking English.
I go to in downtown Chicago, perhaps?
Oh, okay, there you go.
Yeah.
You know, but if you're somehow immune, you know, if you can build this fortress around you, or if you live in San Francisco where they can't even come up with affordable housing to all the wonderful liberals there who own these tech companies and are geniuses and are all making money hand over fist, they don't have to live among these people, and they want all these liberal policies, and they want to be sanctuary cities. Well, you know, as I say, or maybe LaRosha Foucault said it, I'm not sure, hypocrisy is the tribute that vice pays to virtue. They don't want to live it. So, yeah. Trump wants to throw it in their face. I would embrace this policy right now.
I think he should actually take it a step further, and he should make them have to host them for some period of time. He should just put them right in their houses. So basically, take the illegal immigrants, people who are seeking asylum, and say, listen, if you're in favor of this policy, you want open borders, we're going to open up your house, and we're just going to put them in there for like the next 6 months while we figure this all out. What do you think?
Or at the very least, you know, because, boy, that sounds awfully invasive. You know, although maybe
open borders. Everyone wants open borders.
How about this? That when you go to your Whole Foods, okay, that we don't build the Whole Foods in the desert of Englewood. No, we bus people from Englewood to your Whole Foods, and they shop with you, okay, and you know, and they get all the. Good whole, and you like subsidize
like a ride along program.
Well, when they go to the checkout counter, you got to pull out your credit card and pay for what they've ordered.
Adopt an illegal immigrant for just if it's Whole Foods for just $300 a day,
right.
you too can have an illegal immigrant and buy them Whole Foods.
And you could afford you could afford it.
Sure.
You could afford it.
Yeah.
I mean, because under Governor
Because we are the wealthiest country in the world.
No
so
question
there you go.
About it. Yeah, I always love that. Bernie Sanders is smart this way, though. Because it's...
Wait, you're calling Bernie Sanders smart?
Well,
I just want to take this moment in time.
First of all, Carol, you're a member of the tribe just like I am.
Yeah, but here's the thing. That Bernie Sanders has denounced the Jewish religion and he's gone all communist. And so I have revoked his Jew card. Okay? Okay.
Now listen, if we're going to do dueling Bernie Sanders's right now, and I think I sound much more like Larry David than you do, doing Bernie Sanders. Here's the thing. I am blunting what Donald Trump is saying about immigrants. Because if you noticed, I said recently that we can't just have open borders. We can't let everybody in from all the countries. Because, you know, I honeymooned in the Soviet Union. And so I know that we just can't bring in everyone. We can't bring anyone in from China. Seriously, about China, did you know that in, like, 1990, 750 million Chinese lived in extreme poverty, and now it's down to like
single digits,
70 or 10 million or whatever.
Yeah, so they've taken it.
Yeah.
Basically, worldwide, extreme poverty has gone from 50% in the world in the 70s to single digits worldwide right now. And the same thing, it's a very small fraction of the population in China, and it's due
to Milton Friedman.
To Milton Friedman and moving towards capital markets all across the world all the time.
Yeah, but people don't realize
that. But when I'm Bernie Sanders, I don't want to have that. I want to have the socialism because it's the only way my crazy head could get any power.
Let me ask you something.
And money.
All right, Senator Sanders, let me ask you this.
Okay.
As long as you're going to, you know, take over the show and do all the impersonations, are my bailiwick. Let me ask you this. You write a book. You're releasing your tax returns this week, so you got to admit that you're a millionaire.
I'm a millionaire. Yeah, you too can be. If you want to be a millionaire, all you got to do is write a book. That's okay. I don't mind if you're a millionaire if you write a book. Now, if you start a corporation, that's a bad, bad thing. But if you write a book, that's good.
Now, interestingly, because I think most people who write books don't make money from it.
But I mean, I can tell you, I'm a New York Times bestselling author, and I made nowhere near $1 million. I probably, with the amount of press I spent, like, barely broke even.
Wait a minute. First of all, I don't even read books. You
really?
Actually wrote a book that was a New York Times bestseller.
80,000 words. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
I know.
That's one long tweet thread.
That is a long tweet thread.
So you wrote a bestseller. Everybody thinks that when you write a bestseller, that you make a lot of money in.
No, because first of all, as an author, if you have a publisher, you're getting paid like $1 a book or something like that. And then you have all these costs that they don't cover. You have outside press and all these things that you do. So, yeah, I probably made, you know, low five figures. Bernie Sanders, obviously, bigger platform than me. But most people aren't making millions of dollars.
It reminded me when Bernie Sanders said that, you know, being a millionaire, Steve Martin's prescription for becoming a millionaire, first get $1 million.
Right, I mean, exactly.
It's just so, yeah. He's selling smoke and mirrors
100%.
About how to do
he
it.
He is the ultimate grifter. He is just running
three
a grift.
Houses.
Three houses, $1 million from his book. He is running this grift. He has never had a legitimate job in his life. He got kicked off a commune for distracting people. He did. And they said, I'm sorry, you need to leave because you're not doing anything and you're distracting the workers. I mean, he is just the worst.
Note to self, we have scheduled Brett Baer at 7 a.m., but sometimes Brett has other things to do, like watch the Masters. He's a big golf fan.
Totally legit.
Yeah, so I totally understand that if he has to watch the Masters. Bruce, Carol, you know, Dan and Amy aren't here today.
Are we going to redistribute his time? Are we going to redistribute his time to other people?
It's possible, Bernie. But here's the thing. If he does come on, it's going to be to plug the fact that Fox is having a town hall with Bernie Sanders. I think it's this coming Monday.
Which
and it's
good.
Kind of rare that
it's
you
amazing.
Have a Democrat do that. So I think Brett Baer and Martha McCallum are doing it. What I want you to do is you don't have to do it in the Bernie Sanders voice.
No, I
want
to do it.
But I mean, you know. I'm going to offer you as one of the panelists to ask. I guess Brett, Carol would like to be one of the panelists,
capitalism.
And would like to ask Bernie. tell us how to grift. That's what we want to know. And do you think, that's a way?
Can we work that in there somewhere?
Because you got to be very diplomatic when you're interviewing the opposition, as Bret Baier does. Otherwise, they'll never come on your show.
Well, which is really amazing about this whole thing is that the DNC basically locked out Fox. They said that they cannot have debates. And a number of the candidates have gone rogue, and Bernie Sanders is not the only one. There's a whole handful of them that are going to be doing these town halls with Bret and with Martha, and I think it's tremendous.
Like
they should.
Eric Swalwell. Swalwell. Who still thinks that Trump is an agent of the Russians. And now,
talk,
of course, they...
Talk about a grift. Okay, so this, here's the thing. These are people who nobody wants to run anything. Like, I wouldn't put them in charge of my condo association. You don't want them to run anything. And they're like, this is a really great way to grab cash. So I'm just going to, I mean, like, literally, everybody who's in there doesn't really want to be president. Maybe one or two people. These are just, this is just a cash grab.
It reminded me, you're awfully cynical. Maybe you're right.
100% and 100% correct.
It's like in 1980, and I don't think you were even born then. John Anderson ran for president.
I will accept that.
John Anderson ran for president of the United States, but people are saying it at the time. Basically, he's running to become the president of some university. You're telling me these people are just trying to get into the public realm and make money? They're not.
Money.
No, that's, you know what? I think you're projecting a little bit, because I think you as the Wharton grad are all about making money, and you don't think ideals.
If I wanted to make money, here's what I would do. I would run as a parody candidate for the Democrat. I would just go in. I would say, hi, I'm Carol Roth. I'm going to make everything free. I'm going to give everybody $1 million. I'm going to stop global warming by tamping down on toxic masculinity. I just go in as a total parody.
Wait a minute.
I would do this in a heartbeat, except I'd be afraid I would win.
Wait, hold on. Yes, that's the problem. It's right. Like the producers
when the
show becomes successful.
It is. It's the political version
of
the producers.
You just, here's the whole, we're brainstorming here. It's fantastic because I love Broadway shows, but you don't.
And do you like grifting?
And I like grifting.
Okay.
Here's the thing. Can you, have a lawsuit? I work as a personal injury attorney right now. I do. That's my job.
I know.
Okay.
It's still funny.
A toxic tort case against toxic masculinity. We sue 170 million people in the United States. It's a class action by 170 million females against 170 million males.
It's the new green new deal.
Unbelievable.
It's to get us lots of green.
Imagine the attorney's fees we could get on this.
And we are suing for toxic. I am sick. I am ill. Because of all of the toxic
masculinity.
Yes.
We get an expert who comes out there and get them.
From Jezebel.com, clearly.
Sure. And you know I wanted to do.
Gender study major.
You know I wanted to do the medical malpractice show, but.
Because like a satire, office version or like a real version?
Medical malpractice, I mean, there is a legitimate practice of medical malpractice. But the problem is that it's so expensive to have a medical malpractice case because these experts cost a lot of money. You can sink a lot of money into a case. And there's little cases. There's little bits of medical malpractice that occur that there's no remedy for. And it's legitimate. People are hurt by doctors, but worth it. No, okay. So what you do is you have the People's Medical Malpractice Court with Judge Judy, and instead of having real experts on, you just have people look up stuff on WebMD, and then they go, okay.
It's sponsored by WebMD, Bruce. Okay. It's sponsored by them.
That's why you know
this
how
is,
to do it.
This is why they pay me the big bucks, because I can package this whole thing together.
You package it for us where we have it sponsored by WebMD.
Right.
Everybody just brings in their reading from their laptops. Well, here's what WebMD says about that. You leave a sponge in somebody, it's going to cost
Twitter
them.
And then Twitter votes. Based on what they said on WebMD, the people in the comments section vote.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. You don't even need the judge.
But let me give you a case.
It could be a jury.
Let me give you a case. Somebody leaves a doctor leaves a sponge in somebody for 3 months.
What about a junior mint?
Junior
mint. A doctor leaves a junior mint.
No, the doctor didn't leave the junior mint. They let somebody into the viewing room, to the operating theater,
and the junior mint fell in. They sewed them up with the junior mint inside.
Okay, but the junior mint didn't really do much harm.
We don't know that.
Well, we'll see.
We didn't get the resolution.
Let's assume, for arguendo, for the sake of argument, that it does. Okay, it gave somebody like a pain in the stomach for about 2 months. Okay, that's a case that will never, ever go into the judicial system because it's not worth it. But in the people's medical malpractice court,
right.
Sponsored by WebMD.
Yes. I love this.
I'm walking out of here. Somebody's going to steal this idea. Bruce Wolf and Carol Roth. Brainstorming!
Copywritten.
On AM 560,
2019.
This is the morning show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Hola, Amy Jacobson here at the beautiful Maribel Distinct Luxury Residence in Nueva Vallarta. We're here on our passport to paradise, and I'm pleased to welcome to the show Reggie LaPalk. He's public relations manager here at the Maribel Group. Good morning.
Good morning, Amy.
This place is really above and beyond other resorts that we stayed in because the rooms are so well appointed and they're huge. I mean, they're the biggest rooms. So you started here when this resort opened up 10 years ago, correct?
Yeah, of course, Amy. And I'm going to tell you something. We don't call them rooms. We call them residences for that reason.
Because
they're fully stocked.
Kitchen, living room.
Washer and dryers, laundry. It has everything.
All right. And then what's really unique about this place, too, is the food is amazing.
Our executive chef has all of his different chefs and different restaurants here in the hotel. So they're constantly changing the menu every season. We have what's called Signature Cuisine, one of our restaurants. It's called Lemongrass. And that menu changes every single day, so it's never the same. Four continent menu upstairs and in Sioux. We change the menu four times a week at our main restaurant in Omaggio. And then we have a luxury, a brand new, beautiful beachfront restaurant cuisine, which is called Mozzamare. It's outstanding. It's mind-boggling. Beautiful place, wonderful meals. And you would love it.
And the drinks here are fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
We
have a special wine bar over here, Brunello, where we will be going for our wine tasting, because it's a wine. But at that place also, what makes this place unique is no one stands when they check in this hotel. We take them into the wine bar, sit them down, and serve them the drink of their preference.
And that's how you greet everyone who comes to your
resort. That's how we greet all of our guests. We pamper them on a very personalized level.
And
also, another thing, the hotel is not just that the hotel is beautiful. This hotel, you can go anywhere and eat and drink around the world. What makes this place is the staff. Amazing staff. Most of the people, 99.9% of the people that come back here, come back not only for the food and the residences, they come back because of the staff.
And it's not a very large property. It feels very intimate. There's only, 149 rooms, I think?
160.
160?
Yeah.
They hit 10 on me.
Yeah, but we have 8 villas over here on the back, so they include. We have 1, 2, 3, and 4 bedroom units.
That's great.
And we have penthouses on all the top level. And each penthouse is 2 floors with an upper deck with its own swimming pool.
I know.
Infinity, yeah. Oh, you've been there?
I'm a bit of a hotel snob.
Oh, okay.
So when I go to a hotel, I pay a little extra to get the upgrades.
So what do you think?
Oh, I love it. I had my friends over this morning for yoga.
Oh, wow.
10 people came over, and our friend Farah conducted a yoga class. So.
In the infinity pool?
Yeah.
Wow.
In the pool, out of the pool, maybe on the roof, I don't know. Maybe we'll keep those secrets to ourselves. But you've been here a long time because you love it here. And so tell me why you've decided to stay and make this your home.
Well, first of all, the whole Bay Area is a family-oriented area. So automatically you fall in love with the people because it's based on families. Most of the hotels here are also family-oriented. Look at the bay. Look at the mountains. You just had a sample of the food. So you mix all those products together and you have like almost a perfect paradise. Beautiful weather.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
And we're close to Puerto Vallarta, but this area is called Nueva Vallarta.
Uh-huh.
And how long has that been around?
Well, it's all become one name, which is Riviera Nayarit, which involves Puerto Vallarta, Bahia de Banderas, which means Flags Bay, this area, Nueva Vallarta, in the Punta Mita area on the other side. And they call it Riviera Nayarit. One more thing. Maribel Residences, if you're here at this property at the Maribel Distinct Luxury Resort, we just changed the names over to all the hotels to complete our DNA, then what you would do is you would also pamper yourself by going to all the luxury restaurants, the specialty restaurants at the other hotel. So you have access to the other hotel. You have another beach club called Capriccio in the other hotel.
Okay.
So you don't just get one, you get two in one. Packages in one.
Thank you so much, Reggie.
You're welcome.
Hulk, Public Relations Director at the Maribel Distinct Luxury Residence here in Nueva Vallarta.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Listen to podcasts of Joe Walsh and Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Bruce Wolf and Carol Roth in for Dan and Amy. So as promised, you have this obsession with Jay Cutler.
I wouldn't say that it's an obsession. Yeah. I would say it's more of a deep-seated hatred.
Well, get over it, because, I mean, we're in a new era right now.
I thought that I had gotten past this. Unfortunately, his wife has this TV show, so he's still in the media, and everybody who follows me on Twitter knows my history. And so anytime anybody does anything and he says anything, I get the entire Twitterati who alerts me, so I cannot get rid of the guy.
And just to set this up a little bit more and show that I'm justified in bringing up Jay Cutler on the show today, Dan Proft happens to be a Jay Cutler truther. Everybody's entitled to be a truther about something.
Sure.
And because we all have our little shtick. And we argued about this when we were on the air at the time back at the other station. You remember Cutler got injured at halftime of the NFC Championship game against the Green Bay Packers. He didn't come back.
Right.
He had a bad knee.
Right.
And he'd had a bad first half.
Yes, and a bad game.
Well, Dan Proft, the truther, like a lot of Bear fans, thinks that he tanked and that he could have just rubbed dirt on the knee and gotten back in the second half.
Totally possible.
I mean, that's
totally
That's like believing that Obama...
Totally possible.
Sure,
Bruce.
And Obama was born in Kenya and, you know, all that. No, he had a legitimate knee injury. Mm-hmm. And... Okay, so I understand everybody's entitled to be a truther. Well, here's the aforesaid Kristen Cavallari on her show.
I had, like, major clogged ducts. Jay had to get them out for me.
What?
Sucking harder than he's ever sucked. And you know what? Saved my life.
Let's pump the brakes.
Okay, I should have set that up better. but she was breastfeeding. And her ducts were clogged.
Yes.
And she's saying that Jay helped unclog the ducts.
Yes, she said that he sucked harder than he's ever
sucked. Let me play that again, okay? Let me play that again so I can set this up properly.
Thank you.
We'll get this right by the 8 o'clock hour, okay? So here's what she had
to major say. Clogged ducts. Jay had to get them out for me.
What?
Sucking harder than he's ever sucked. And you know what?
Sucking harder than he's ever sucked, Carol.
And as I said on Twitter, as a Bears fan, I say that isn't possible.
Hi-yo! Hi-yo!
Not possible.
Not even a rim shot.
Not even close. Not close to the amount he sucked.
I still like that trade. You know, I still think that we should have invaded Iraq.
The problem with
hindsight's 20/20.
No, the problem with Jay Cutler, two problems with him. First problem is that he had a great arm but wasn't a good quarterback. So that's two separate issues, big challenge. The issue, though, was that he got paid so much money that we couldn't build up a team. If he was just bad but he wasn't getting paid a lot of money, I would have had a very different feeling towards it. But the fact that he was so bad, took all of our money, we couldn't have a team, you know, defense, any other positions, that's why I have this deep-seated hatred, and it will never go away. Although, as I said, I moved past it because the Bears
somebody
are looking
close
good.
Somebody close your microphone already.
Yeah, we
look,
won.
I mean, first of all, you're a chick, and you're talking way
chick.
Too smart about sports. Look, here's what I told my
but
daughter.
But you know I'm my father's only son, so
okay.
To be fair, I've been doing this since I was young.
Yeah, but it's not. It's very threatening to me, okay? And I got to tell
what
you.
What isn't very threatening to you,
as
Bruce?
I told my older daughter, there was this one year when she was about 16. I think it was the 2001 season. She actually watched the Bears games with me. Our lives intersected at that
point. That's good.
You know, now I do the crossword puzzle with her. We compete against each other.
Okay, crossword puzzle, whatever. But the Bears game is good.
But we were watching the Bears games, and she had mentioned to somebody on the phone, or mentioned that the Bears had Adewale Ogunleye at the time. And
yeah.
She said, oh, yeah, he was traded for Marty Booker. And I gave her this advice, and I'd like to give this to you, girl.
Oh, good, Bruce.
At the time,
please do tell.
Some fatherly advice. I said, look, if you ever, when you start going out on dates, it's okay to say that you know about Adewale Ogunleye is on the Bears. But if you say that he was traded for Marty Booker, the guys are going to think you're dykey. Okay, so.
Here is where I'm going to reject the advice. And as a woman, as I said, who was raised as my father's only son, I've been watching football since I was young and
right.
All the other sports. Are you kidding me? Men love it. The fact that I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm into football and I play fantasy and I watch boxing and MMA. You know how many marriage proposals I get just on that alone? They love that. Maybe you don't love that because you're a little femme, Bruce, but I'm just saying. You know, you like your show tunes, whatever, but the manly
men. I love
men,
a parade.
The manly men appreciate a woman who knows her sports.
Are you saying that just because when I was on television and I was putting on makeup in the makeup room, I would sing, I enjoy being a girl. Are you saying that there's a little feminine streak in me there?
A little I am woman, hear me roar. Yeah.
Look, all I'm telling you is that there's a certain point at which you cross over from being the girl that guys like to being, wait, she's too smart about sports. You got to hold back a little bit or you're never going to get a fella.
No. Well, okay, well, the good news is I've had one for 20 plus years.
Oh, okay. Right.
So we're all good. Right. He's pretty appreciative of that. But as I said, I get proposals nonstop once I flex my knowledge. It is.
You think you know more about sports than I do? You know I'm an award-winning sportscaster.
You are an award-winning sportscaster.
But I didn't know that much about sports. I remember Howard Cosell wrote the book, Never Played the Game. My producer said I was going to write this book called I Never Went to the Game.
Oh, no.
So, I mean, just test me on one thing that you think you know about sports that I don't know. An award-winning TV radio sportscaster in Chicago. Just ask me one question. Go any question. Like, you know
more than I do.
All
right. So here's a good question. Right. So obviously we're going to go into the next football season. Who's your number one pick in the fantasy draft?
Cade McNown?
Exactly.
It's the draft. I mean, I don't know who's on the
fantasy draft.
I thought you meant the NFL draft.
No. Last
year I picked Le'Veon Bell. Okay. And I kept him.
Did you really?
You could have given me the advice to jettison by week 8.
At that point you got to let it go, right?
I kept him the entire season.
Amazing, amazing. All right, so who are you taking first round this year?
Based
on where we stand right now.
The number one pick in the fantasy draft this year would probably be Le'Veon Bell because he's rested for a year. Who would you say is the number one
I went with Alvin Kamara last year, and I did really well with that.
Okay, and who are you going to pick this year?
You know, I'm a loyalist, so.
Well, that's your downfall.
Yeah, my downfall. I won my fantasy league like.
Yeah, but you don't be a loyalist. You either be loyal or you make money. You got to make your choices right here.
There's a way to do both. There's a way to do both with principles, Mr.
Mike.
With principles
from the north side. Hi, Mike. Mike.
Yeah, Bruce. I don't know where you get these Friday co-hosts, but how can you criticize Cutler? You can always tell if someone's a closet liberal or not if they criticize Cutler.
Oh, come on.
Because everybody, listen, I'll tell you why. Everybody loved Cutler until that game with the Giants where he was sacked 9 times in the first half because the left tackle was a putz. And when he yelled at the left tackle coming off the field, then people said,
he's
a racist.
I never liked
Thank
Cutler.
You, Mike.
He held the
Thank
ball
you.
Too long. Here's the problem. You can't drop back and hold the ball for like 25 seconds. It doesn't work. He never released the ball quickly. He made bad decisions. He was not. He had a great arm. He was a terrible quarterback.
He also threw off his back foot a lot, I noticed. He did throw off his back foot. Among the number sixes in Bears history, he would rank not Kevin Butler would be number one, right?
Sure.
Right?
Or
okay.
Robbie Gould.
Robbie Gould was number 9. Okay. Well, you're listening to Sports Talk with Carol the Dude and Bruce the Femme here on AM 560, The Answer.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM 560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Bruce Wolf and Carol Roth. In for Dan and Amy. I was trying to impress.
Just having some fun.
Well, I wasn't trying to impress Carol off the air because she's so young. I was trying to regale her with.
How young am I, Bruce? Just keep telling me how young I am.
You are. I mean, you know, you have to understand anybody who's not in his or her dotage is young to me right now.
Love
but
it.
I was trying to impress
That's why
her,
I hang out with you, actually.
Yeah, impress you with stories about, you know, my illustrious broadcast career. But our telephone number, if you want to give us a call, is 312-642-5600, 312-642-5600. And what do you want to talk about? Julian Assange? No.
How about Michael Avenatti? We haven't talked about
Michael Avenatti. Okay, so he gets he's getting charged. And I'm an attorney, and he's such a shanda on the profession, as we say. He could face 300 years in prison. Here's the one of the, and the U.S. attorney came out yesterday. He withheld a multi-million dollar settlement. He'd already settled a case for
this
a guy
horrendous.
Who was a mentally ill paraplegic. And he withheld the money for years, and he took the money and he bought a jet with it.
I know.
You don't do that kind of thing.
I mean, like, literally, like, what? How low of a human being do you have to be to steal from somebody who has that many issues in their life? And you're their legal representative. I mean, listen, not surprising to me, you could look at this guy and tell that he was a scumbag, but he was the savior of many on the left. There were people who were encouraging him to run for president.
Totally.
Unbelievable.
And here is the U.S. attorney, Nick Hanna.
Mr. Avenatti received the money on behalf of clients and simply took the money to finance his businesses and his personal expenses.
You know, I got to hand it to the guy. And that he had bamboozled so many people. You know how many CNN appearances he made? He was there.
CNN,
he was a go-to
and MSNBC
guy.
Was hundreds of appearances. It's amazing to think that creepy porn lawyer actually was the good nickname that we have
now,
for him.
Doesn't Tucker Carlson have a registered trademark on creepy porn lawyer?
I thought,
did he not? I hear him say that all the time. Is that his, or is that in public domain?
I believe it's public domain. Kind of like, you know,
Kleenex
is becoming
exactly.
kind of genericized. I feel like many people have taken over creepy porn.
See, I've always told Dan Proft that he should register Tiny Dancer, because he's the one who came up with Tiny Dancer, and you know now it's part of the lexicon.
No, it's not good.
He doesn't get royalties.
Part of the zeitgeist.
I'm always looking out after Dan
for the little
There's
people.
No question. You're going to be working with him.
On Monday.
Let me give you a little warning. He's smart, knows a lot of words. You might want to learn what QED stands for.
Okay.
Do you know what it means? QED, it's a Latin term, and I forgot what it means. Okay, so you don't know. I mean, you graduated Wharton, but you don't know. So look up QED. What else? What other words? If he uses fungible, you could say that he got that from me.
Oh, that's good.
Because I learned that in law school.
Yep.
That, you know, most people are fungible turkeys.
They're easily exchanged one
for the other. Yeah. Like Tucker Carlson is the same as Sean Hannity or something like that.
I don't think they're the same, but that's okay.
I don't either.
But back to Michael
okay.
Avenatti.
Oh, we got it. Okay, go quickly. If you can make the point in like 8 seconds in a tweet.
He's a bad person, and he got what came was coming to him.
No, he certainly did.
Yes.
He certainly did. And he will not be on CNN. But he gets fooled
well, he
so
might
much.
Be on CNN, just not in the same role that he had previously.
I mean, I don't know. They're beyond embarrassment, because I think Rachel Maddow should just resign.
Remember when they had Brett Elliott Spitzer back?
Oh, exactly.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Ding, 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 ding. Bruce Wolf and Carol Roth in for Dan and Amy. Well, Carol, Fox News Channel will present a town hall with 2020 Democratic presidential candidate Senator Bernie Sanders on Monday, April 15th from 5:30 to 6:30 Central Time in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Co-anchored by Special Reports' Brett Baer, the story's Martha McCallum. The town hall will focus on the economy and jobs. We are pleased to be joined right now by the host of Special Report, Brett Baer. Good morning, Brett.
Morning.
Good morning.
Good to talk to you. And we were talking earlier about this, and we're trying to think of good questions that you could ask Bernie, because you can always use the help. Carol.
Oh, sure.
Carol is a New York Times bestselling author. She made bupkis on her book, barely broke even. Could you please guess, Bernie, how do you make $1 million off a book? Because that's...
Yes.
Yeah, how did that happen?
And also, isn't that capitalism?
Oh.
but, no, we've got, this town hall should be interesting. It's in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and we'll focus on jobs and the economy, you know, the big issues that you're hearing on the campaign trail, driven a lot by citizens' questions, you know, voters' questions. There'll be Democrats, independents, Republicans in the room, and then Martha and I will kind of redirect and follow up and hopefully get a lot of substance out of the guy who is now the front runner of the declared Democratic candidate.
The fresh face of Congress.
Yeah, and quite an evolution from 2015.
So, Brett, I'm really curious how this came together. Obviously, the DNC tried to shut Fox out. Why do you think that Bernie broke ranks here and decided that he was going to do this, which I think is really important?
Yeah, so we obviously have communication and relationships with all of these campaigns. We still cover them every day. We have embeds who go and travel with them. And we've been in conversation even after the DNC made that wrong move about the debate and, you know, offered these town halls. Bernie's the first to take advantage of it, but there will be more. Can't make an announcement today, but we're working on a lot of things.
You know, it's interesting. I know it's focusing on the economy and the jobs, but it's more than tangentially related to bring up immigration, because, of course, that affects the jobs of a lot of people who are competing with illegal or undocumented immigrants for jobs. And I thought it was a masterstroke that Bernie is blunting Donald Trump's assault or taking over of the immigration issue by simply saying, we can't let everybody in. That's going against the grain of the trend of the Democratic Party, and that could be a very winning move. Imagine them both in a debate against each other, and Trump is arguing immigration, and Bernie Sanders isn't really arguing that much against him, maybe this or that program or the wall. But
yeah,
it's pretty good.
No, that's right. You know, and frankly, they're on a number of different big issues like that. They're on the same side. When you talk about pulling troops back from Syria, Afghanistan, elsewhere, the president and Bernie Sanders are actually similar. When you talk about trade and making sure these countries pay up for, you know, trade deals, Bernie Sanders and President Trump are similar. Now, they are worlds apart when it comes to Green New Deal or Medicare for All or, you know, free college for everybody. But there are similarities, and we'll be going down those roads.
Britt, it seems like a day doesn't go by where somebody else doesn't jump into the race on the Democratic side. At some point, we may have, I don't know, upwards of 20 candidates. And if you do the math on that, it's not going to take a lot percentage-wise in order to win the nomination. If you could handicap things right now, I know that Bernie obviously is the front runner. What's your feeling? Who do you think might win?
Wait, you want Brett to play Candidate Casino?
I do.
He's the moderator of that.
I do.
I see what's happening here. That's how I got my panelists for years, to actually give me how they thought. If I had $100 chips, I would put 50 on Bernie. I mean,
wow.
That's how big I think he is off for the races. I do think, when all is said and done, you know, Biden's going to get in this race, I think. I think Kamala Harris will be formidable. I think Beto will survive through the process. And I think there'll probably be, you know, only four that make it all the way.
So do you think if he ends up winning that Howard Schultz will end up staying in the race?
I do. If it's Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, I'm almost positive, having done the town hall the week before with Howard Schultz, that Schultz will be in.
Brett, I noticed conspicuous by his absence from your list was Mayor Pete of South Bend nearby. And you had a report yesterday about Mayor Pete. Essentially, this week, he kind of picked a fight with Vice President Pence, saying, hey, if you have an argument with the way I am, argue with my creator who made me gay. And Pence was having nothing of it. Pence is basically playing rope-a-dope with Mayor Pete, saying, you know, I always liked him. What's the fight over? But this is really where the rubber meets the road on the culture war, isn't it, Brett? Because it is all, I mean, you know, we talk about the economy and everybody says, oh, yeah, people vote on the economy. But it's the visceral things. It's the way the culture is going. And right now, I mean, a lot of people voted for Trump, me included, because I wanted a couple of Supreme Court justices who weren't going to take Obergefell over the rails and get it so that synagogues and churches would lose their 501c3 status if they didn't perform gay marriages. I mean, there's a lot there to it, and I know people are trying to paper over this stuff, but that fight between Mayor Pete and Mike Pence is something that's not going away.
Yeah, and I think Mayor Pete Buttigieg.
I just can't pronounce his name. That's why I didn't say it.
And no one else can either.
He's fine with Mayor Pete. We've talked to his folks there. I think that he's on the rise. He's a comet. He is taking some of Beto's mojo. And I think that, he's touching that issue that is really sensitive and it's powerful as a social issue. But there are others that Republicans will touch, and that is like late-term abortion. That polls about 80-20 against, but yet, you know, you go down that road with some of these candidates, and they're pretty wide open, you know, beyond a woman has a right to choose. You start getting into what the Virginia governor was talking about. And so I agree with you. Those are the things that animate. But the biggest issues of the day are the ones that, you know, we have to find common ground on, and we haven't as a country.
Yeah, Brett, I would say that one of the biggest issues of the day, and certainly one that I think will be front and center for the election, is health care. And the Republicans have completely dropped the ball on this over and over again. Do you think they will have any skeleton of a plan going into 2020? Because I think it's going to be very difficult for them to win the House and keep the Senate and make sure that President Trump is reelected if they don't have any plan in place.
They have to. They have to. I asked Mitch McConnell that on my set the other night. They have to have a plan. And, you know, they're working on one, he says, and President Trump's going to run on one, but right now they're running against the Medicare for all single payer system that Bernie Sanders is pitching, that, you know, would essentially erase people's private insurance, about 180 million people, and put them all on a government program within 4 years. So they're running against that, but they need their own plan to run on. You're right.
Brett Baer, we're talking to Brett, Fox News special report. And don't forget, you've got the town hall with Bernie Sanders on Monday from 5:30 to 6:30 with Martha McCallum. But politics, schmolitics, Brett. It's the Masters! Brett, the Masters. So let me tell you what's going on here. So yesterday, Brooks Koepka shoots a 6-under. If people don't know, this guy, he won two of the last three majors. You know what a major is, Carol? Well, it's important. I'll tell you in the break. And he's really like the greatest golfer on the planet right now. But then in the offseason, for some vanity photo shoot, he lost a bunch of weight. So you got people like Brandel Chambly on the Golf Channel saying that you know, this is horrible what he did. He doesn't have a chance of winning the Masters. Well, yesterday, he's the leader after the first round. Now, I'll say, Brett, you know, he leads only a 48-year-old guy by a stroke named Phil Mickelson. But apparently, Chambly doubled down yesterday after Koepka shot this round. And Rich Lerner told him, hey, he's won three majors in 2 years. And Brandel said, a career is not defined by how many majors you win. Well, yes, it is, Brett. What's going on here? Tell
Brandel,
me.
I don't know. Maybe Brooks' team is paying off Brandel to fire Brooks up. Because that's actually, when he won the U.S. Open, all the writers were saying, you know, he's done, he doesn't have a shot, and he proved them wrong. And sometimes they get that fire, and that's what spurs them on. I think he looked great yesterday. I watched in between getting ready for special report.
Sure you did, Brett. And, you were watching while Hemingway was giving you answers. I'm sorry, what was that? What was that you said? No. Yeah. Phil just chipped in. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. All you do is you ask the next panelist.
right. Next.
Yeah.
No, so what do you? Who
I
did
like
you?
Ricky Fowler still.
You still like Ricky Fowler? He had a pretty good round.
I
did you pick him beforehand? Did you pick Ricky?
Did.
See, I picked Rory because that was, you know, everybody thought Rory was looking great. There's something about the Masters that, you know, he can't handle. I think it's possible that Brooks is going to win the career Grand Slam before Rory does.
You know, man, it looks like it. And Bryson DeChambeau, he's doing the math out there. He's getting it done.
You know what? I have an issue with Bryson DeChambeau because did you see his last shot, his approach on 18 yesterday? He hits the flag. Of course you saw it because you weren't paying attention to this stuff talk about Mayor Pete.
I recorded it.
Oh, okay.
That's right. If you're recording it, that's a high level of commitment.
So, Carol, he hits the flag stick. And this guy is like a scientist. He computes everything and drives every other golfer on the course crazy because he takes so much time doing it. But he hits the flag stick and and then he talks about velocity. I had people saying to me,
"Sounds it's like actually, my physics it's actually, class,
right?"
Grade,
well, he thinks
right?
It's terminal. It's not terminal velocity. It's just velocity. And I think, Brett, he should have looked at the coefficient of restitution of the flag stick that it knocked the ball back and out of the way. You Brett Baer and I doing golf jokes. That's a show. Forget
that's
this
good.
Guy.
Bad Masters joke. That's
bad
really
Masters
good.
Joke. So, what do you think is going to happen today? In the Masters.
I think it's going to be a good day today, but then the weekend's going to get ugly. So I think anything can happen.
Because of the weather? Because of the weather?
Yeah.
Oh.
Are you more confident? Are you more confident about that or about Bernie Sanders winning the election?
That's a great question.
All right, Brett, we will watch you.
I think, go ahead. I think Tiger Woods winning this Masters would be the same as Bernie Sanders winning.
I have a good idea. Let's put Tiger Woods in on the Democratic side. He could run for president because everybody else is running as well.
Okay, there you go.
There's room.
Carol with the last word. Okay. Brett, thanks so much for joining us. Special report tonight at 5, and then you've got that town hall with Bernie Sanders on Monday, 5:30 to 6:30. Thanks so much for joining us, Brett. Appreciate
it. We'll see you guys.
Brett Baer, Bruce Wolf, Carol Roth, in for Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Bruce Wolf and Carol Roth sitting in for Dan and Amy. So another little sports note, Carol. Cubs pitcher Yu Darvish and his wife are being sued for a fence they had installed around their mansion on Lake Michigan in Evanston. Their neighbors filed the suit claiming it blocks their view from the lake. The lawsuit also claims that the Darvishes violated an agreement they made with the neighbors last year.
They can't see Lake Michigan. If you've got a backyard, you want to be able to see the lake.
I get it. I think, hey, neighbors, just hit one over the fence. Darvish is used to that. Whee!
Hey.
I mean, like that guy could be the biggest bust in Chicago Cubs or Chicago free agent history.
Yeah.
Oh, you're the sports maven here.
Yeah.
Yeah, in case you haven't been listening, Carol knows a lot about sports and business because you went to Wharton. Donald Trump went to Wharton, too.
Business is a sport, don't you think?
Totally.
Contact sport.
So I always thought, well, Jason Hayward is like the biggest bust, although he did have a good day the other day. Oh, he's got something like $168 million. And what's he good for? One good Newt Rockne-type speech, obviously in a great time during the rain delay of Game 7 of the World Series. I'll grant him that.
That's a pretty important time. How much did you pay for that? What's the value? What's the discounted cash flow analysis on that?
Well, let me ask you, a business person. If you amortize it over the last 108 years before
priceless.
It's worth everything in the world.
By the way, do you know that I was at that game, right?
In Cleveland. Oh, I watched on TV in a bar somewhere.
I was there.
Why were you there? Why?
Because it was part of history. So
wait. There are 9 million residents in the metropolitan area here. Why do you get to go to Cleveland Municipal Stadium or whatever it is?
So this is what happened. So it was game six. And, you know, we were up by like four runs in the fourth inning or whatever it was. And I turned to my husband and I said, you know, there's going to be a game seven. And he's like, yeah. I said, we should just cancel everything and go. And he's like, yeah. And so I called my sister and her husband and said, you're going. They're like, I'm like, no, you're going. We went on StubHub like during the game and we bought tickets.
During game six.
And we got in our car.
How much did they cost you, if I can ask?
I don't even remember, but whatever it was worth it.
It was five figures, wasn't it?
No. It was cheaper in Cleveland than the middle games in Wrigley because it's Cleveland.
Supply and demand.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Yogi Berra once said, it's so crowded, nobody goes there anymore.
Exactly.
You're not going to tell me the price, but you can pay.
Whatever it was, you can pick up and go to Cleveland and see the game.
Did you have good seats?
Oh, my God, yeah. We sat in, like, the club lounge area where they had this special. Yeah, it was amazing.
Are you even a Cub fan?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. Got it. And then it was really.
You were at game seven of the World Series.
And it was one of the top five highlight days of my entire life. It was the most amazing experience. Almost half the people who were there were Cubs fans.
Let me ask you, when the ground ball goes to Chris Bryant, which I think is I'm a longtime Chicago sportscaster, historian, and everything like that. I'm not even a Cub fan. But I believe that is me too. Can we play The Natural or something like that? I think that is the most iconic moment not only in the history of Chicago sports, but maybe in the history of the universe.
I agree.
Because let me, could I just explain the moment?
Yes, explain the moment.
The tap, the ball comes to Chris Bryant. He comes in on it. And within the 1.1 seconds where that all occurs, the entire history of the 108 years flashes before your eyes. And the guy had the presence of mind to smile. I'm getting chills about that. I'm tearing up about that because I remember my father went to Wrigley Field. His father gave him 20 cents to go on the streetcar to see the 1945 Cubs. I was at the game in 1967, July the 2nd, 1967, when the Cubs went into first place for the first time in a generation and people jumped onto the field and Ron Santo clicked his heels. I knew Ernie Banks. Sure, I wouldn't play golf with him. I understand that. But it was and that moment, he throws to first and you think, is Rizzo actually going to catch it? And he does. And they win the World Series. And now Cub fans are fetching that they're not winning another World Series? Are you freaking kidding me? Go ahead, Carol. You were there. How was it for you?
It was incredible. I would argue that out of all the important games of all the sports in all of history, that it was potentially the most exciting game ever. Because if you think about the fact that the Cubs went up, then Cleveland came all the way back. Mm-hmm. Then we have this rain delay, that all the drama that's involved, on top of the fact that it's a game seven and you have this 108-year history.
Do you think it's more important than, who was it? Was it Pheidippides who ran the marathon and then dropped dead?
Totally more important than that. He just got a race named after him, whatever.
Is it more important than Jim Thorpe, than Jesse Owens winning the medals in the 1936 Olympics?
100%.
It's more important than that.
100%.
Is it more important than Joel Horland's no-hitter in 1967 for the White Sox?
It's more important than all of them.
It really is.
I was there, and it was incredible.
Did you scream?
I cried. I screamed. I took videos. We all sang. We hugged each other. We made friends with all of the other Cubs fans.
All right, will you shut your app for a second?
Sorry.
We have to go into the newsroom. Mike Scott, good morning. Hello.
I'm speechless. Holy cow.
Hey, holy cow.
And how wrong could you two people be?
Oh, really? What's the most important moment?
In Chicago, Scott Podsednik's Game 2 walk-off homer in October of 2015.
And
I'm a Tigers fan.
Are you kidding me?
Wah, wah.
The White Sox?
Are you kidding me?
Look, Mike, I'm
are
a White
Sox. Are you kidding me?
Mike.
Come on, people.
Mike.
Come on, Cubs fans, wake up.
Mike, I'm a White Sox fan, and even I
it was a
know
ground
that Chris
ball. Br- It was a ground ball. Podsednik walked off.
On game two of the World Series?
Do you have any idea?
The entire series.
To the first World Series appearance in this town since, oh my goodness, the White Sox win.
I question your news judgment now. Get the hell out of here.
I don't want you to do the news now. Where were you in the 1990s when I was at all your games and only 2,000 of you were there?
You know what? I don't trust a damn thing that you say. I don't believe a word. Verify him when he gets to the weather.
Hear about the big stories of the day. Then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
How would I look walking a dog on the White House lawn?
But I was trying to think who had a cat.
Socks. The Clintons had Socks the cat.
On AM 560.
Well, to be fair, the Clintons also did have a bitch in the White House.
Hey-o.
The Answer.
Yeah, baby. Bruce Wolf and Carol Roth in for Dan and Amy.
Wow.
So, ba-ba-da-ba-da-ba. Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox was in Springfield yesterday for a press conference with crime survivors, emphasizing the need for more trauma recovery centers. Her office says she's not taking questions. I don't usually like to quote Eric Zorn, but he tweeted, that's some press conference where you don't take questions. I would like to take another crack, if I might, an appeal a little earlier in the show. Some of you may not have heard this. I wanted to argue because, I'm an attorney.
This is the people's court.
Yeah, it's the people's court. And I wanted to argue the case on behalf of Jussie Smollett.
This is, by the way, the most difficult case that anybody could potentially argue. So it's very nice of you to take it on, Bruce. Pro bono.
I am. And I don't know if you're qualified to be judge or jury because you live in the Streeterville area, and a lot of people don't know.
Conflict of interest.
A lot of people don't know that Carol one of her many side businesses. She does tours of the Jussie Smollett
Streeterville tour. Yes, we go and we visit the site where it didn't happen, and then we continue on to the Subway where you get a Subway sandwich.
Right. Yeah. Now, of course, as we well know, any good prosecuting attorney could proverbially indict a ham sandwich. In this case, it would be a tuna sandwich. But
a dropped tuna sandwich that was so important that he picked it up back off the ground after he got
me.
Beat up.
I give my opening statement here. So, ladies and gentlemen, or lady of the of the judge and jury, right here. Here's the case: the Tsarnaev brothers, or whatever they were. That was the Boston
Marathon. Osandairo.
The Ozymandias brothers. What they wanted to do was they are the ones who wanted to play a trick on Jussie because they were envious of his success. So what they did is they bought these masks. They put a little makeup on, and as you've seen in one of their videos earlier, one of them actually did put whiteface on as the Joker for Halloween. Now they didn't put the white, but they put some. They have access to this kind of makeup.
By the way, you've seen these brothers before, right? You've seen that they are giant body, giant, amazingly sculpted, godlike creatures.
And objection, what is the relevance of that?
Because there's no way that you have somebody who's like that and you wouldn't recognize them as your own personal
trainer.
First of all,
they're wearing a heavy coat. It was 20 degrees below zero.
And then you would think that they're somebody from MAGA country.
I wouldn't be surprised if one of them was on the other one's shoulders. And
wearing a coat a dog on top of it and a fedora.
It happens so fast. That was the whole thing. So they're wearing the mask. He doesn't recognize them.
No, they're totally non-recognizable.
No, they don't.
Your friends, the personal trainers that are sculpted.
With a mask on.
That clarifies the fact that your biceps are bulging.
First of all, there's a lot of shrinkage that goes on when it's 20 degrees below
George
zero.
Okay, George Costanza.
The biceps go... I think the audience gets the reference. If they don't, you don't have it. Can I finish my opening statement before you object to it?
No.
All right, go ahead. So you're going to have to assume, arguendo for the sake of argument, that he doesn't recognize them, and that's plausible. So they got the masks on. They don't he doesn't recognize them, and then they scare him. They didn't know that he was going to go to the police over this.
It
got out of hand. They didn't do that much to him. They didn't take anything
Bruce
or whatever.
Wolf.
And that's what happened.
Bruce Wolf, you live in Chicago. Mm-hmm. On a Tuesday night, if it's 20 degrees below zero, why would anybody walk outside, let alone somebody who is an actor from Empire who could get food from anywhere, have somebody go fetch it for him? And why would the Osandairo brothers come across town and know that he was going to get a Subway sandwich at 2 o'clock
first
in the morning
all,
and scream, this is MAGA country?
First of all, they're the Tsarnaev brothers. But secondly, they come, look.
I mean, it's more plausible, honestly, that the Tsarnaev brothers did
first
this.
First of all I have to do is give you reasonable doubt. I don't have to
There's nothing reasonable
this. Well, I mean, you're begging the question right now because you're just saying so and merely asserting
Listen, I saw Legally Blonde 15 times.
Right.
I know my rights.
Look, Jussie was going out for a tuna sandwich. He wanted to go out. It's not that far to the Subway shop.
It is. It's several blocks, and it's really cold, and nobody was out, and certainly not at 2 o'clock in the morning. And us people in Streeterville are super lazy.
Not all Streeterville, this is why you never get on the jury, not all Streeterville people are like you.
Oh, no, they are. They're actually worse. If somebody barked, they walked their dog at 2 o'clock in the morning and barked the wrong way, 9 people call the police.
Jussie,
that's what happens
Jussie
in Streeterville.
Smollett is not a Streeterville person. He's a Hollywood actor.
In Streeterville.
Who happens to be in Streeterville because he's shooting a show at that time. He's really not of your community. He is an actor.
He's
a stranger.
He's from Hollywood. He's
and
even more
Hollywood
of a prima donna.
People go out for Subway sandwiches
no
at 2
way.
In the morning.
Nobody from Hollywood even eats Subway. Let's be honest.
You know what?
It's got carbs. You're telling me he's eating carbs? I object, Bruce. I object.
It is a
I'm throwing this entire case out. This is ridiculous.
It is his little vice that he sneaks and gets a little carb once in a while and
at
a tuna
2 o'clock
sandwich.
In the morning.
So he goes out there. He doesn't recognize them. And by the way, and here's my total proof. I mean, Jussie Smollett is no great actor. okay? He isn't. He's on Empire, and he's not that big a deal.
Wait, and he's not a great actor. And he's not a great director either, because the camera was pointing in the wrong direction.
No, here's the thing. He's not a good actor, and yet, when he appeared with Robin Roberts on that interview and did all the other interviews, he was authentic. And you know why he was authentic?
He wasn't authentic.
He was authentic because he wasn't faking it. Now, I also, just as a threshold thing, I believe O.J. was innocent, and I'll believe anything anybody tells
me. And I've got a bridge to sell you. How much would you like to pay?
Anyway, so the city sued yesterday for $130,000, and Kim Fox won't take any questions. She's doubling down on the racism thing. I told people on these airwaves, when she was running against Donna Moore, I think her name was, a white candidate, the primary for state's attorney, Kim Fox was playing the race card then, and nobody nipped it in the bud then. And now the chutzpah of this woman, Kim Fox, who didn't take any questions at a press conference yesterday, to double down and hide behind, if you can, hide behind the race card.
What this whole thing's been about.
And that's why you hope that Lori Lightfoot is going to put an end to this. Because as Nixon went to China, which I believe is a Vulcan saying, if I'm not mistaken, as Nixon was the only one able to go to China, it's going to take an openly gay black female mayor to put Kim Fox in her place, because no white guy could do that.
No, potentially. And you're missing another really important part of this here, is that if this actually ends up going to trial, I mean, you're the lawyer here, won't Rahm and Superintendent Johnson, won't they have to testify?
Well, what would they say?
I don't know. I mean, that's where the good stuff potentially happens, right? I mean, you tell me, you're the lawyer. What would you ask them? What kind of juicy stuff would come up?
We'll do that after we listen to Dan and Amy getting drunk in Mexico. Bruce Wolf and Carol Roth in for Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
How is you?
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, we're coming to you from the Marival Distinct Luxury Residences in Nuevo Vallarta, Mexico. We're on our Passport to Paradise vacation, and a part of the vacation has been a good deal of golf, at least for me. I've done about 20,000 yards of golf in 3 days, and you played on Monday with us.
I did. I played with you on Monday, and rental clubs and me don't get along.
I am blaming the equipment.
I had the shoes, I had the outfit, but I didn't have my fitted clubs, my Big Bertha senior driver that I used to really pound it off the tee.
Yeah.
Instead, I was just going back and forth trying different clubs. But it was actually, to be honest with you, the worst round of golf I've ever played in my life.
I'm glad you said it, because it was the worst round of golf I've ever had to endure in my life, was watching you play. And, oh, by the way, since I was there, I mean, I hate to correct the record, but you were fine off the tee for the most part. It was everything,
No, my putting came to life toward the end. I mean, I sunk some big putts. That 30-footer I sunk, remember? You're going to give it to me? I said, Trump, give me.
No,
and I said, no,
I don't.
I've got this.
It was very much like what is alleged of Trump, where anything within 50 yards you were giving yourself.
I mean, I was approaching the green. I said, that's a gimme. I don't need to chip. That's a chip gimme.
This is the problem when you have a rumor out about the commander-in-chief like this. He ruins the game, because the lesser players out there think, if the president does it, then I can demand the same treatment.
Well, I will say this. Your golf game has improved a ton. You're playing the professionals.
Yeah, I played the tips all 3 days. It's true. The Norman course, 7,300 yards. The Nicholas course was about 6,800. And then played a Weisskopf course, Vista Vallarta, which is the best track we played
in
the mountains. It's a beautiful course.
So it's way up you travel.
It's
all
only
the way
about a half hour from here. It's really accessible.
Got in the mountains.
Yeah, but it's a beautiful course. And that's about 7,000 yards. So that's my 20,000 yards. I actually played. I posted one of the best rounds I posted in a long time the second day when you were not in my foursome.
Oh, wow.
So I could concentrate on the game. so I shot 74. But then after that, when I went up to Vista Vallarta, I lost it again. And so I was back in the mid-80s. And so, just when you think it's all coming together, God snatches it all away from you. Just laughs and laughs.
So but there's something about your game that'll make you come back, though. Right?
We still got time here.
Oh yeah,
we're gonna play again.
Well, I'm going diving. I'm going to be swimming with sea lions.
Mm-hmm.
And stingrays.
I
brought my certification, Patty.
And your harpoon gun.
Yes,
so you don't have to rent a harpoon gun, because I don't want all the caterwauling about I didn't have my harpoon gun from home, and that's why I kept missing the sea lions.
You swim with the sea lions, Dan. You don't hunt the sea lions.
Oh, I see.
So he's we'll see if he likes, you know, because there's no cats here to pet or play with, so I can go in the ocean and see if there's a sea lion.
Ocean cats.
Yeah, exactly.
The sea lions. The cat of the ocean.
The ocean, right.
All
exactly.
Right. All right. We'll report back on Amy's foray with the sea lions. Dan and Amy coming to you from the Mirabel Distinct Luxury Residences in Nuevo Vallarta.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Bruce Wolf, Carol Roth in for Dan and Amy. So, Carol, we only have a couple of seconds to talk about this, but off the air, you were positing the thesis that Donald Trump is actually funny. To me, he's presidential funny, you know, like a woman can be office pretty. I mean, it's only funny because he's the president.
I actually think it's the opposite. I actually think that he's really funny. But if he wasn't the president, it would make it more funny.
See, when you say Little Marco, I mean, that's not clever.
Rocket Man. There's Rocket Man.
Okay.
It's amazing.
You know, even doesn't call make fun of Elizabeth Warren the right way. It's Pocahontas,
that's
not
true.
Pocahontas.
He did botch that. But he has a lot of things that just happen sort of naturally as he's talking. That people take as real things that he's saying, where he's really having a sense of humor about it. I don't think people give him enough credit for his sense of humor, again, probably because he is the president, and it would be much funnier if he wasn't.
I just like when he makes up stuff out of whole cloth, like that the Soviet Union's was right to invade Afghanistan because the Afghanis had terrorized the Soviet Union. That's Spicoli talk. Mean, it didn't actually happen.
We don't have enough time to go over all the things that he makes up, but I think that he actually has a pretty good sense of humor.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Ding, 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 ding. Bruce Wolf and Carol Roth. Who are you again?
Who am I? I am a entrepreneur, recovering investment banker, and I play myself on television and on the radio today with you, Bruce.
And you went to Wharton. Of course, Donald Trump went to Wharton, too.
We both did,
of course, he was a legacy or whatever. He got his dad. I think his mother is Lori Loughlin, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And they paid for it. Yes. It had to be. Speaking of using clout to get into school, I saw this tweet. A whopping 37% of Harvard College's class of 2022 is composed, anyway, of legacy students. So, you know, that's just having your parents having gone to Harvard.
Well, it doesn't have to be your parents. It could be an uncle or some family member.
Right, of course, the chutzpah of the, and that's a legal term of art, by the way, Harvard, because Harvard is always telling everybody else. They're always telling everybody else to be diverse. And here they are with more than a third is clout got you in.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, Harvard's got like a 30-some-odd billion-dollar endowment. So I always say it's actually a hedge fund that is basically disguised as a learning institution anyway.
Well, all right. And because you know all those terms and can make jokes like that, I'm going to have to defer to you with our next guest here. We are pleased to be joined by Jeff Korzenek. He is the chief investment strategist at Fifth Third Bank. I can't even balance my own checkbook, Jeff, so take it real slowly with me, all right? Appreciate it. Good morning.
Good morning. You can pick on Harvard and Penn as much as you like. Just leave Princeton alone, okay?
Oh, wow. You know, the only time I ever heard Princeton was in Risky Business when Joel, played by Tom Cruise, couldn't get in there. He was an entrepreneur.
He knew how to do that.
Well, Jeff, before we get into the things that I'll defer to Carol about, you know, actually how to invest things, if we could look in a macro sense, because I'm always good about, you know, the macro stuff. At least I pretend that I am. Will you please tell us, for example, how we're going to pay for the Green New Deal? How are we going to do that? Is that possible?
Well, first, it'd have to pass any body of Congress. So I'm not terribly focused on paying for it until I think it has a chance of passing.
All right. Well, as Jerry Reinsdorf once said, always put off till tomorrow what you don't have to do today, because the problem could take care of itself in the meantime. All right, tell us how to balance our checkbook right now, or maybe you can ask a more refined question.
Perhaps let me take this one, Bruce. So, Jeff, great chatting with you. Obviously, you've got some consumer sentiment information coming out today. What does that say about the state of the economy, and where do you think we're at?
So I'm a little bit of a contrarian on consumer confidence in the sense that we don't place a lot of weight on that. Here's how it works in the United States. When consumers are confident, we spend. And when consumers are not confident, we spend and call it retail therapy. So what really drives the consumer is household income. We have a very positive view of household income because we're at the sweet spot of the labor market from a macroeconomic standpoint. Conditions in the labor market are quite tight. That means workers in the United States are getting real wage gains, but they are not so high that after being offset by productivity, they cause a problem for the Fed with end-user inflation. So 3.5-ish% wage gains in the United States that don't cause inflation because we have growing productivity mean we have an empowered consumer, and that's good news for the U.S. economy.
You know, and I've heard these statistics recently that the Trump economy is helping people on the lower end, and I think this jibes with what you're saying right here. And this may sound like a stupid question, but if things are getting better that way, then why is our life expectancy going down every year and we have the opioid crisis? Am I missing something, or is there a Venn diagram that you can do right here for me?
So we think that's a legacy effect of the very slow recovery that we had and the very deep downturn.
And so if I can interject, Jeff,
sure, go ahead.
That's code for blame Obama.
Yeah, you are talking to the last true nonpartisan and swing voter on the planet. So
really,
I don't attach blame to this. I just try to lay out how we see things. We looked at what happened in the downturn and then the sluggish recovery. One of the most striking components of that was different than any modern post-World War II recovery was the way that the long-term unemployment exploded. So we've never seen long-term unemployment in modern American history to the degree we saw in the wake of 08-09. Give you an example, just measurements we use. But by 2011, half of everyone unemployed had been unemployed for more than 6 months. And that is a real weight on the economy. It causes despair. It's no doubt part of the reason that we saw the growth of the opioid epidemic, people self-medicating, the sense of despair that was present. And you couple that with this incarceration and recidivism cycle we've been locked in. And that's done a lot of damage, but that's starting to be unwound today, which is great news.
All right, but here's the problem. And of course, if we get Stephen Moore, who's just going to be the puppet of Donald Trump on the Fed or whatever, is this just the sugar rush that we're getting from what Trump has done with the economy? And are we headed and we're due for a recession one of these days anyway, right? So, you know, what's around the corner, Mr. Investment Guy?
So we don't view this as a sugar rush, particularly the corporate tax reform really made the U.S. tax structure competitive on a worldwide basis in a way we were not before. And that's very, very important. The other thing that has come largely with the administration is this pro-business message that has elevated business confidence. Unlike consumer confidence, business confidence matters because it drives investment for the future, and that helps sustain a longer recovery. Expansion.
You know, Jeff, one of the things I know that you are particularly passionate about is helping those who have been marginalized through this downturn, as well as just from some other social issues, whether it be people who were formerly incarcerated or were subject to the opioid epidemic or not whatnot, to re-enter the workforce. Can you talk a little bit about why that's so important?
Sure. If you were to look at the unemployment rate and traditional responses of the economy when you get unemployment this low and you get labor markets this tight, that usually means that a recession is right around the corner, or, you know, say 6 months to 18 months away. But we've never had a condition where we've had so many sidelined workers. And so to the degree we can get people who are on the sidelines, who are of working age and willing to work back in the workforce productively, given the sheer numbers, we could extend this expansion by at least another 2 or 3 years.
Wow. You're so sanguine about all this. You know, I tend to be the pessimist. As you, from my questions before, I'm worried about are we going to see a population boom in the United States? Because the irony is, if we don't bring in the immigrants, we're really not reproducing ourselves anymore. I think the rate was like 1.77, which you need 2.1. And don't ask me why you need 0.1 of a child in order to replenish the population. But it does seem like we're going in the direction of extinguishing ourselves. Am I wrong about this?
No, Bruce, you're absolutely right. If you look at long-term structural constraints on the economy, meaning how fast can we grow over time, it's a function of two things. How fast can you grow your workforce, and how productive can they be? And how productive can they be is a function of how much investing we're doing, but there are limits to that. The workforce growth, ultimately, we will need immigrants, and we will need more immigrants in this country. But for now, the tightness of the labor market, because we have restrictions on immigration, are helping get the business community invested in solving some of these social ills. Just to give you two quick examples, if
sure.
I could. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce recently came out with a new initiative to help employers help their employees who are struggling with addiction. So instead of firing the people, they're looking at ways, how can we support employees, keep them gainfully employed while helping them through rehab? That's a sea change in how business approaches
Tremendous.
These kind of issues.
Yeah.
The other data point is a great initiative. It's a joint initiative. It's being led by the Society of Human Resource Management, SHRM. That's the trade association credentialing organization for human resource potentials. They're working with the Koch Foundation, and they've started a Getting Talent Back to Work initiative, which is focused on helping the business community understand, how do you hire people with criminal records? When should you do it? What are the ramifications of that? So to your earlier point.
There's one more suggestion, yeah, and we have
sure.
to wrap up, unfortunately. I want Carol in her high-end Streeterville area to hire somebody from Rogers Park, a native American, and pay that person $25 an hour to mow her lawn. What do you think of that, Carol?
Which, by the way, is amazing since I live in a condo that has no lawn.
I don't care if you don't have a lawn.
Well.
Pay somebody $25 an hour to make sure that the Tsarnaev brothers don't attack Jussie Smollett in your building, okay? Hey, Jeff, seriously, no, those are great initiatives, and it's great work that you're doing. And thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you. Jeff Korzenek, Chief Investment Strategist at Fifth Third Bank. Bruce Wolf and Carol Roth in for Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, we're in Mexico, Nuevo Vallarta to be specific, the Miraval Distinct Luxury Residences to be more specific. We're on our Passport to Paradise vacation. Hat tip to Apple for all of the fun and enjoyment we're having here. But so we played golf first day here. Well, first weekday here, we played golf. You were in the group. And then after that, you said that the entire group, the four of us, said, you know what would be good after golf is a little bit of massage. A little bit of a massage.
So then Dan rubbed my back, gave me a Biden,
right,
and I went home happy.
Yeah.
I had a Robert Kraft. What did you have? Danny Solis?
I'll tell you, now I understand why everybody wants to be a Chicago Democrat, because it's nice to be treated like that. We went to the beach, and the damnedest thing. You lay down on the table, and all of a sudden your suit's off.
I know.
I mean, they're like magicians.
It was a quick...
It's like pulling the tablecloth out from underneath the silverware.
They don't ask. They just take it out. She took off my bathing suit, and they're like, oh, hey there. Hey now. What are you doing down there in the heathen region?
Yeah,
lady?
And then you ask for her number.
And then
and you guys are going to stay in touch.
Let's be friends.
It was a great... Really. That's one of the amenities, though, on the beach, is you got little massage huts, as it were.
Yeah.
But no, real monkey business. You just get a little bit of a lower back rub.
I will say there was a little bit of a creep factor to it, because six of us got massages at the same time. Marcus Brown wasn't
one
of them.
Caligula.
I don't think he would have partaken in that activity. But it was It was a little strange. I mean, I looked up. I was in between you and Chris, and then Danielle was there. Like, this is just kind of weird.
I know Jeff Reisman, our general manager, would never have partaken in that.
No.
Because he wears his T-shirt in the pool.
Right.
So if he's not going to take his T-shirt off to get in the pool, he's not taking it off for a masseuse. I know that.
Yeah. But it was reasonable. I mean, it was $30, right? I gave a $10 tip. That was pretty good for an hour massage.
It was great. I thought it was a little bit offensive when you asked after your massage if they had seen Finding Neverland. I thought that was a little bit mean-spirited.
Kind of aggressive.
Yeah, that's this is their way here. You have one in Nuevo Vallarta, as the saying goes.
God,
so we were properly loosened up.
Yeah.
And then we went to dinner. And by the way, the food here has been great.
It's been amazing. And the presentation and the plates that they're on. And I don't know if you go to the morning breakfast buffet.
Yeah, I do.
Everything is so well addressed. I mean, they don't just put yogurt in a bowl. They put it in canning. Have you ever been canning?
No. I don't know. Are you like canning. Laverne and Shirley?
Canning. What are those glasses
canning?
Called? Canning. The cans. They put it in when you pickle things.
No, I've never been pickling or canning.
Well, I'm saying they use that type of...
I'm a white-collar worker.
Okay. Well, they use that type of, you know, instead of just using a porcelain bowl, they'll use a can, a glass can. It's beautiful.
Okay.
Everything's, it's beautiful.
I'm taking your word for it. I'm going to go back to the food.
Yes.
And they've had, and like some food that can be real hit or miss. Like I had the duck the other night after our golf and massage. I mean, that was like the best day of my life. You had the golf, you had the massage, you had good duck. And a bottle of wine, and I never want to leave.
And I did not know that they have such wonderful Mexican wines. They have a wine country, too, in Mexico.
We did the whole Mexico wine tasting. We've had we went up to the Sky Bar here at the top of the building where I'm staying. And they did
where you're staying?
Yeah, where I'm staying.
Oh,
my building.
Your building.
And they did a whole flight of different tropical drinks for us.
Wow.
So pretty good time. Pretty good time we're having here in Nuevo Vallarta at the Miraval Luxury Distinct Luxury. Either way, residences. Dan and Amy coming to you from Mexico, our Passport to Paradise vacation.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Jive talking. Is this a comment? Is this a passive-aggressive thing by the producer saying that this is just a bunch of jive talking that I've been doing all week?
It's what AOC was doing at that conference that she was at. She was doing some jive
talking. Yeah, she was. And you know what the thing is about AOC? Thank you, Carol Roth, for being with us today. The thing about AOC when she did that, they were calling it something. They were saying it was like a verbal blackface at first that she was saying it, but then they sanitized the whole thing.
Yeah, no, there's a word for it.
No, I've got the word. If you just vamp for a second, I'll look at it on my yellow legal sheet.
So this word that Bruce is going to tell you is basically
it's called code switching.
Exactly.
Code switching. That makes it kosher. It's code switching. So does that mean that I get to do an Al Jolson imitation? No, I don't think so.
No, it means that you get to talk like Bernie Sanders and you can say oy vey because you're part of the tribe.
Right. If you're Jewish, you can talk like Bernie Sanders.
Right. Yeah.
And quite frankly, I think I do a little bit of better Bernie Sanders than you do.
100%.
I think so.
100%.
Thanks.
But I do other things better. But it all evens out.
But I can do a Jolson. But I'm not going to do it.
No, you probably
I can't do it
that.
Because
I would advise
because then it would
it.
Be verbal blackface and not code switching.
Well, because I'm not the audience for that. But if you were in an audience full of Al Jolson impersonators, maybe that would be
code switching. It's like Chris Rock was able to tell a black audience Jussie Smollett jokes.
Correct.
I can't do that.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Bob Conway, President, Charles Equipment Energy Systems.
On AM 560.
The only thing we do are things that suck, squeeze, bang, and blow.
Wow, we'll be right back.
The Answer.
Bruce Wolf and Carol Roth in for Dan and Amy. And just cleaning up a couple of things here, Carol.
Yes.
Remember earlier in the show, I had said, Julian Assange, is he guilty of anything? Or does New York Times and the Pentagon Papers cover everything? And he's a journalist and he goes off scot-free, even though he was dragged out of the embassy like he was Dr. Dow from the United Airlines flight. And I had mentioned that Andy McCarthy of National Review, the esteemed Andy McCarthy, who you can see on Fox all the time, he's the legal expert, had said, well, really, the issue boils down to the congressional definition of the statutory definition of terrorism.
Correct.
And so I actually asked Andy on Twitter about that, because I wondered if the definition of terrorism was way too broad and might be unconstitutional because it just mentioned coercing the government.
And did he tweet you back?
Andy tweeted me
back.
That's
so cool, Bruce.
I mean, that's Andy McCarthy tweeting me back.
He tweeted you back.
Yeah, because, see, I've got clout with it's the whole point. You understand the sub silencio point is that I'm making here is that Andy McCarthy.
You're kind of a big deal.
He answers me.
You're
I'm
kind
the epicenter.
Of a big deal.
That,
you okay. ask a question. So what did he say?
So he said, Bruce, coerce the government is a pretty common explanation of terrorism. Coerce is a word like obstruct. A person does not need to succeed in order to be guilty of doing it. Mm. The idea is the terrorist tries to extort or pressure the government to alter policy. But again, my question is it constitutional? But thank you, Andy, for tweeting back to me.
And I still think the hacking situation is an issue as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I mentioned that you're going to be working with Dan on Monday.
Yes.
Okay. And
looking forward to
you
it.
Don't be intimidated by his big vocabulary because I taught him to use the word fungible. Not that he didn't know what it meant.
I have an Ivy League education.
Sure.
I think we'll be able to.
But you didn't
it.
Know what QED stood for.
I'm not a lawyer.
Okay.
So.
But QED, yes. which is something that Dan uses, and I think Steve on 88, I think, who told us
he
of this,
helped
it essentially
out.
Means that which was to be demonstrated. And you usually put it at the end of a mathematical proof. So if he throws QED, just tell him, oh, you mean quad erat demonstrandum or something, whatever. All right.
I will brush up on my Latin over
okay.
the weekend.
Will you brush up on your golf over the weekend? Because the Masters is going on right now, and we are pleased to be joined. And I may have to recuse myself from the discussion, and you may actually have to conduct the interview. Because I
know.
Are you
conflicted?
Well, yes, I am conflicted. Because Joe Bosco's a friend of mine. Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
I got to ask, Joe, are you actually a friend of his, or is he just throwing that out there?
No, actually, we go back a little bit.
Joe has been a golf instructor for many years. He's at Joe Bosco Golf right now. He's the Playing Lesson Pro. And make sure that we, you know, hype whatever website you have or anything like that, Joe, before we're done. But I took I took golf lessons from Joe, and when I broke 80 for the first time, which was only on July 14th, 2001, not like anybody would know the date.
Approximately at 8:37 in the morning.
Joe calls, it's a Pine Meadow Golf Course. He calls the Tribune because he knows people. And I get in a column, a media column, that I broke 80. Well, the next week I go to Pine Meadow for my... And everybody on the driving range is going, oh, Mr. 79, look who's walking by. You know, it took me like 10 years later.
To get past that.
Thanks, Joe, for nothing.
You're welcome. So, but there's another highlight you have to post about. And that, didn't you have an ace, a hole-in-one?
In front of Dan Proft.
Wow.
Yes, exactly. In front of Dan Proft, I got a hole-in-one.
And I'm assuming this is all due to the wonderful schooling of Joe.
Joe is fantastic. And, Joe, we want to talk about the Masters. All right,
yes,
so here's the whole thing. Brooks Koepka, last I saw, was leading after yesterday's round. Brandel Chamblee. Okay, we're getting a little into the weeds on this, into the second cut of rough. He said that Koepka had lost too much weight for this vanity photo shoot that he was doing. He lost 24 pounds. He wasn't having a good season. And now, of course, he's won two out of the last three majors, and he was leading the Masters after the first round. You'd think that Brandel Chamblee would eat crow. Instead, he's doubling down, according to my sources, and saying, you're not defined by how many majors you win. Actually, you are defined by how many majors you win.
Isn't that the literal definition?
Joe?
Yeah, really. Well, you know, I know Brandel, and he is kind of like the heir apparent to Johnny Miller, where he's going to say stuff, it's going to get controversial, but he's always going to be talked about, whether it's good or bad. He's always in there saying
the
something
Donald
that stirs the pot.
Donald Trump of golf.
Totally. He's very smart. Chamblee is smart. All right, so, Joe, when you watched the Masters yesterday, I mean, from your viewpoint, because, I mean, Joe's so good. You know, Joe would, when he's giving you a lesson, he'd say, look at my biceps. They're not really there. And I'm hitting it, you know, 5,000 yards. And then I would hit it, you know, 45 feet. But, Joe, what did you see there yesterday when you were watching?
Well, you know, the biggest part of my mix of what I do is mental performance coaching. And it really transcends golf. I do it in other sports with professional athletes and college athletes and business people now. The mindset is what you really, I mean, that's what... Oh, everything that goes on in the Masters is the biggest deal. Like everybody there wants to win it. And they don't normally, a lot of them don't bring the same mindset to that tournament that they bring to any other. And sometimes it really screws them up. You know, but yesterday what happens is Brooks Koepka played later in the day, and so did Bryson DeChambeau. And,
sure.
and these guys got to see the rest of the field. It was a fairly benign day weather-wise, which really makes a difference. When the wind's not blowing at Augusta, and I've played there, and I've been there to watch the tournament.
What'd you shoot? What'd you shoot, Joe? What'd you shoot at Augusta?
You want the honest truth? I shot an 83.
It's not bad.
I parred Amen Corner. There were 2 inches of rain the day before, and the greens were twice as slow as I would have expected them. I could never get the golf ball to the hole. Anyway,
okay.
But what happens is those guys are so talented, but they're comfortable with who they are. And being comfortable just saying, hey, I'm going to go out and be me and play my golf game and not trying. I think clearly the guys who pressed yesterday and it didn't work for them were Rose and Spieth. I mean, these guys are talented enough to win. They have won.
You know, but Spieth, let me interrupt you, Joe. Spieth has not been good lately, but he was horrible yesterday. And the guy who choked, hey, you're Joe Bosco, the mental master. I get this. Isn't Rory pressing? Isn't that why he didn't perform that well yesterday?
Sure. Well, you know, the jinx was on him because everybody's saying, well, he's at the top of his game. You know, he's the one that to watch. And then he didn't quite bring it. Now, today is going to be a huge day. Obviously, the rain's there and it's softer. And if there's not much wind, but it's softer, well, then there's going to be a lot of opportunity to go at flags. That golf course really is, and everybody says who goes there for the first time, it's so much more undulating, and there's so much more to it than you could ever imagine, and it's just such a special place. It really is.
So, Joe, from a mental standpoint, what's the top thing that you end up telling golfers on a consistent basis? What's the big mental issue that's the block to improving their game?
So the biggest thing really about the whole point of view on the mental side is that most people, if you're having any kind of concrete or verbal conversation with yourselves as you're walking into the shot and when you're stepping over the ball, addressing it and making your swing, if there's thoughts percolating that you're conscious of, the odds are you're not going to tap the coordinated skill that you have. Now, that's been documented through functional MRI studies at the University of Chicago, as well as there's a technology that a number of those guys you watch today have used, this technology that I was the beta tester for in this country.
Really? Dalai Lama, right? Total consciousness we're talking about. Yeah.
Well, you're exactly right. But here's what it's a mind-sensing headband that goes underneath a hat or in a hat. And it's an EEG monitor. It does some other things as well.
Oh, my God.
So it's like Alexa for your head. Alexa. What's going to happen to this the swing?
Well,
Alexa, stop playing The Grateful Dead in my head right now.
Exactly. Well, so I was out at the BMW a couple of years ago when both Jason Day, who won the tournament that year, and Justin Rose were using it in the practice round.
Oh, I mean, really?
So it's on the golf course, and I'll bet you there's more than 24 players that you're watching today that have used that. I have been, and I use that today. I use that with business people to help them focus and concentrate. You know,
I need that before I go to bed. I need that when I'm in bed to tell me to shut up.
Joe, you're not going to give me 20 extra yards on my the way I need to get 20 extra yards on my 7-iron is to get more forward shaft lean, right?
Yeah, there you go.
But not to some EEG. Am I right or am I wrong?
Well, it is interesting that people, when they get calmer and less thoughtful consciously, their golf swings work better. The golf club goes a little faster, and you make more putts, too. But let's talk about what is the key. What is going to be the key to this whole tournament? Is it distance? Is it short game? Is it putting? And
No.
Well, that's right. But I'll tell you, I think prayer.
Sure,
that's going to be the biggest.
I'm sure. I'm going to be praying when I go to the 12th hole if I'm an AM corner and I start channeling my inner Jordan Spieth and hit two in the water. Let me ask you a final question about this. What's the big deal about Koepka leading the tournament? He was only beating a 48-year-old guy by one stroke, i.e., Phil Mickelson. So what's the big deal, right?
Well, yeah, and you know, historically, if you look at the stats, people who are at the top of the leaderboard on Friday tend, pretty high percentage, tend not to play so well today. So that's going to be an interesting story to watch today. And everybody needs to get that Masters app, which is free because it's so fabulous. You get to really see what's going on if you can't get near a television.
So if we go to Joe Bosco Golf, right, online?
You'd bet. Yeah, actually, you'd best to email me at joebosco@gmail.com. That's the best way to get a
contact. All right, you seduced me again. You're going to be plugging me like Frankenstein again. I mean, Bruce, I'm going to get 30 more yards.
And now after everybody watches the Masters, they're going to say, okay, I need to talk to Joe. I want to get in that mental state.
I can bring you back to July 14th, 2001. You're going to shoot 79 again. Joe, thanks so much. Stay in touch.
My pleasure. Nice to see you guys. Take care.
Joe Bosco, golf instructor, Joe Bosco Golf. He showed me video of Fred Astaire playing golf, a movie. Fred Astaire had never picked up a golf club in his life, okay? And they shot this scene with music, and because he was just so adept, I mean, he's Fred Astaire.
Right,
he could have done it on a ceiling upside down. Right. He could have played golf. And he just takes a golf ball, and they have all kinds of golf balls all around, and he's just dancing and hitting golf balls because he was Fred freaking Astaire.
It's amazing.
It's been fun having the dance with you this morning, Carol.
It's been a lovely
dance. We'll be back for a final word, I think. Bruce Wolf and Carol Roth in for Dan and Amy on AM 560 The Answer.
Listen to podcasts of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Ow. Ow, 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 ow. Are you going to sing Carol Roth before? What's your favorite karaoke? What's your go-to song in karaoke?
Well, I don't do karaoke, but if I did one, I would probably do Criminal by Fiona Apple.
Do we have... I know the Fiona Apple show for The Affair. My wife and I always sing it when it comes... That's The Affair. But do we have the Fiona Apple Criminal?
Oh,
while they're looking for it in our music library here at WIND...
Oh, goodness.
All right. Carol Roth, everybody. Criminal by Fiona Apple. Does it ever start? Show's over at 9 o'clock.
I've been a bad, bad girl.
Yeah!
I've been careless with a delicate man. And it's a sad, sad world. When a girl can break a boy just because she can.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You take it, Bruce.
I don't know the song.
I don't know the song.
I
think we're good on that. Anyway.
Carol Roth.
Thank you. This might be my broadcast premiere. I'm not really much of a singer, as you can tell.
Make an MP3 of that.
Send it over to
WLS.
Sony.
No, WLS is going back to, rock and roll music,
today. But you can't hear me. If you do want to hear me, you can hear me on my podcast, Roth Effect.
Yes.
Which is on Ricochet.
I talked over it.
The Roth Effect. Okay. It's on Ricochet, iTunes, Google Play, anywhere fine podcasts are downloaded. Mm-hmm. And then also check out my legacy planning system, FutureFile, at FutureFile.com, which is important for every family to get their wishes and legacy information together.
And are you going to be on CNBC or whatever you're
on?
No,
I'm on Fox
today.
Business. I'll be on After the Bell at 3 p.m. today.
Right,
Fox Business.
And you're not. I know you're a Hawks season ticket
Twitter
holder.
Twitter at Carol J.S. Roth.
Yeah. Oh, tell us your funny tweet today. Jay Cutler. Okay, let me set this up. I hope I set this up right. Jay Cutler's wife, Kristen Cavallari, was talking about that the fact that she's got a baby having trouble breastfeeding. And here's what she said on her television show.
I had like major clogged ducts. Jay had to get them out for me.
What?
Sucking harder than he's ever sucked. And you know what? Saved my life.
Let's pump the brakes.
Carol?
Yeah, so as I said on Twitter, as a Bears fan, I don't think that's possible.
That he could suck any greater. Yes, there you go.
Yeah, she said that he sucked harder than he's ever sucked before, and it's just not possible. He sucked much worse.
Yes, you know what? I still like the trade for Cutler. You almost got into the Super Bowl, but for an injury that Dan Proft said that he could have rubbed dirt on the knee injury and come back in the second half to beat the Green Bay Packers. But that's history.
It's history. We got a team. Yeah.
Dan Proft is a Jay Cutler truther. That's who you're dealing with on Monday.
I'll be back Monday, but it was a pleasure being with you, Bruce.
It was nice being with you. What are you going to sing on Monday?
I'll have to work on yeah. something new over
you know
the weekend.
You said you can't sing, but you actually can.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, it's very, very good. All right, so you got a lot of other
you
talents.
Have to, I'll pay you the $20 after the show.
Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Always tip your host. And thank you so much. Thanks
and don't
to everybody
to try
here.
The meal.
Hey, I didn't thank Justin and Quinn and Keith and Jeff Reisman and Marcus Brown and his Band of Renown and
your
else?
Wife and the Academy
and Mr. Salem and you know, all those people. Thank you, everybody. And of course, Mike Scott, thanks for putting up with this.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.